call this meeting to order. Requirements of the Open Public Meeting Law, PL 1975, Chapter 231, have been satisfied. That adequate notice of this meeting has been published in the Star Gazette and posted on the bulletin board at Borough Hall stating the time, place, and purpose of the meeting as required by law. Have a roll call, please.
Leva.
Here.
Suarez.
Here.
McDonald.
Here.
Higgins.
Here.
Coyle.
Here.
Do all please rise and join me in saluting our flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
First up, we have our council appearance from Mr. Schneider. If you'd like to bring a chair with you, Mr. Schneider, please feel free.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, council people, for inviting me back. I know you received a series of written questions regarding the forensic audit, and you have asked me to respond to that.
Mr. Schneider, would you bring the microphone a little closer to you, please? Maybe bring it around to the side.
How's that?
Is that better? Go to the audience, I didn't hear you before.
We'll do the best we can. You posed a series of questions to me, and I thought it would be appropriate that I respond, and I'm glad I can respond today, which is respectfully sooner than I thought I could for my own personal reasons. But nonetheless, I've looked at the question, had reasonable time to make my notes. I respectfully commend the borough for doing this protocol, because I actually think it's productive that I have reasonable and adequate time to respond, think through the questions, and sometimes go back to our notes and work papers to bring up some of the detail. And also, I know there might have been some controversy after my presentation on June 1 that I didn't respond immediately to questions. But when I look at these questions, the council and I guess the citizens had reasonable time and good time after June 1 and came up with questions which showed some insight and some challenge. So I actually think it's more productive that they read the document and came back with questions rather than doing impromptu on June 1. Nonetheless, I tried to put them in reasonable order, and of course I grouped the like kind questions, because sometimes I got numerous questions about the same areas. I thought the first question I thought it would be appropriate to respond on was where did I get your CPA certificate? I presume that's an overall request as to my education and certification, so let me just give you a brief background. I got my undergraduate degree at Rutgers University, Rutgers College to be exact, and at that time, it was, I guess I graduated in 1973, it was the height of the Vietnam War. You couldn't take enough county credits to be certified. You actually had to go to graduate school. Business was a dirty word back then. So I took as much county credits as I could from Rutgers during the day courses. And I applied for graduate school to Wharton School of the University of Pennsylvania. And I was lucky enough to be admitted to, I guess, one of the finest business schools in the United States. After graduating from Wharton, I sat for my CPA exam. I was physically working in New York while living in New Jersey. So I happened to mechanically sit in New York, and I passed each part first time around. Relatively unusual percentage, probably 10% of people passed that. So I was certified in New York in 1976. 2 years later, when I was working in New Jersey for another CPA firm, I got my reciprocity from the state of New Jersey as a CPA in 1978. I have been constantly certified in the state of New Jersey and the state of New York since those dates. So hopefully that's satisfied the public as to my reasonable background as a CPA. And by the way, I've been practicing, I thought about it in the cards, now I guess 38 years. Now all but 6 of those years, I was actually practicing CPA. The last 21 years in my own firm, and for the prior periods in other firms. Except for 6 years in the middle, which I had a very interesting experience, maybe some people are very interested to know about. I actually left the profession of public accounting because I got a call from one of my clients who introduced me to Donald Trump. Donald Trump at that point was just buying what was then the Castle, soon to be changed to Marina, his first casino in Atlantic City. He wanted to boost up his accounting and finance department in Trump Tower in New York for his oversight, so he convinced me to leave my profession. I was a partner in a firm at that time. And come to work directly under him for the Trump Organization. And in my position there, I was corporate treasurer. I controlled the SEC reporting of each of the three casino hotels, and did the investments and tax consulting. So that was certainly probably 6 of the most interesting years of my life, and partly from there is where I started getting my friend's experience. Because respectfully, he was always suing somebody, or somebody was always suing him. And I really did get involved in litigation from my first day at work with him, often about contractual disputes, about acquisitions or sales of hotels and/or casinos. So that's a little of my background. The next question is what qualifications do I have regarding municipal accounting procedures? Well, as I stated in my response to your RFP, I had performed a similar forensic accounting engagement for the township in Vernon, Sussex County, who had a smaller question than yours. They had spent probably $12 or $13 million on a main street downtown, and it came to pass that the council and the constituents there wanted a closer look, a forensic look, at that $13 million being spent. So they put out a bid. We responded. We got selected, and about 3 years ago, we spent a good part of one summer doing that forensic investigation. And similar to you, I presented my report to the mayor and council. They saw it fit to pass my report on, I believe, to the attorney general, the state police, and a special prosecutor. And I know there was a grand jury convened, but I didn't follow the, nor was I called subsequent to that knowledge. So that's where I got my forensic accounting municipal experience, which I assume gave the borough the confidence to select me among its other bidders.
I guess the, one of the major areas of concern where I got at least three questions on, and I'll read them, is what's the difference between a forensic audit and a forensic investigation? Same question, what's the difference between a forensic audit and a forensic accounting investigation? And is there a difference, then, who is responsible for making the decision to perform an investigation and not an audit?
So let me address that as best I can and
respectfully give you a little background as to my professional requirements as a certified public accountant in order to or help you understand the answers to these questions. As a certified public accountant, the American Institute of the Certified Public Accountants, I'll refer to them as the AICPA, publishes accounting standards as to what we can do, what we can't do, and how we should do it. I brought one of the two books of standards, because only one of the two books is applicable to us. The other is applicable to the strict financial statement audits. But under the professional accounting standards, as a CPA, and the standards are somewhat promulgated so as not to confuse the public, to be clear and straightforward, as much as you can from a CPA, they let the CPA do three types of engagements. The first major type of engagement is tax. Everybody knows that commonly. We're allowed and we prepare tax returns. The second area of engagement, I'll call it, is financial statement accounting and auditing. That is where an entity, just like the borough, prepares its own financial statements, and we come in under any one of three types of financial statement engagements. One is an audit. That's the highest level of confidence that we give our opinion on the accuracy or the reasonableness of those financial statements. A review, which is a little less comfort, and a compilation, which is respectfully a reading. But the word audit, in our terminology, is married to that type of engagement, which is audit of financial statements. So I was very clear not to try not to misuse that word, and really try really hard not to misuse that word. Because as far as my professional standards, it's audit of financial statements. And the pronouncements or the guidance is clear. Because respectfully, the public and lay people may use that word in a general term, but when we use it, it's a specific type of engagement, and it's the audit of financial statements, is doing enough testing to understand. And the borough has its financial statements audited by your own municipal accountant. They issue a good report once a year, so that let that not be confused, which what I was engaged to do. The third area of allowed procedures for accountants is consulting and valuation. And that's where this type of engagement falls under. So an accountant is allowed to do valuation of businesses, many different types of consulting, whether it be software, Friends Accounting Service is one of them. We'll get to that in a minute. But there's some guidance as to how we do our consulting engagements. And just, I will redo the rules which I'm bound by. Consulting services differ fundamentally from the CPA's function of attesting to the assertions of other parties. So the attesting to the assertions of other parties refers to the audits and maybe the reviews, and the AICPA is making a clear distinction that this work is different from that work. In consulting service, the practitioner develops the findings, conclusions, and recommendations presented. The nature and scope of work is determined solely by agreement between the practitioner and the client. Generally, the work is performed only for use and the benefit of the client. Let me read what I really think is the operative sentence here. Let me read it once again. The nature and scope of the work is determined solely by agreement between the practitioner and the client. And that's just what the borough and I did. They came up with a proposal. I put in an RFP. We negotiated. We came up with a contract. And that's exactly what we did. And as part of the general consulting, what we can do is, and this gets in more of, I guess, the public's point, is forensic accounting services. And certainly the guidance is there on what is forensic accounting services. And of course, the paragraph is labeled forensic accounting services. For purposes of this interpretation, forensic accounting services are non-attest services. Non-attest means non-audit. By definition, forensic accounting services, for my profession, to me, use that in professional language, is non-audit. We don't want that confusion with the audit of financial statements. And I continue. And forensic accounting services consist of litigation services and investigative services. Well, for purposes of this, I do a lot of litigation. That's not what was here, where I represent the lawyer and a party, calculating damages, normally, or disputing damages, or sometimes looking for hidden assets in matrimonial. That's not here. We're on bullet point two, which is investigative services. Okay, so we did, under the forensic accounting services, we performed investigative services. It was allowed. And of course, the caption or the definition of investigative services includes all forensic services not involving actual or threatened litigation. So it's a catch-all of non-litigation. So it's clear from my professional standards, okay, and I try to make it clear in my RFP, my contract, that we were performing professional, sorry, we were performing investigative, forensic investigative services, offensive investigation. Now, I understand the public respectfully keeps on asking about a forensic audit. Well, that's, in our literature, there's no such thing as a forensic audit. It's a forensic investigation. And once again, the forensic investigation is defined as agreement between the parties of the procedures to be performed. So, there is no mantra out there detailing, for our professional standards, a forensic audit. Doesn't exist. In fact, it's the antithesis of what the guidance says. Don't use the word audit. Don't confuse the public. Don't increase their expectations. And don't confuse it with another procedure. So, hopefully I can, you know, bring this together as from the RFP, which the borough put out, I responded the only way a professional CPA could, offering what was allowed. And respectfully, I think I had heard that you heard that from several of your other bidders who you invited in, that it was just the misuse of words, and there might have been some expectation unwarranted that's not in my literature, okay, not in my guidance. So we did everything we could under the standards in our forensic in investigation. And I'm careful not to use the word audit, because I don't want to inflate the expectations for something which is not professionally defined. So I propose to perform certain forensic investigative procedures, some of the scope of which was at my discretion, and hopefully I met that challenge when I believe I did when I presented my report on May 1. Next question is your analysis solely opinion or solely factual or a mix? I don't know how to answer that question. I'll answer it the following way. We perform procedures, and then we describe the observations from those procedures. And that's what we did. So that's the best way, respectfully, I can answer that question. Next question is, what forensic accounting methodology did you use noted on page 2, paragraph 7, as well as what analytical procedures? I think it's a very good question. As I explained on May 1, our basic mantra was to follow the cash. For my whole life in audits, we've been taught to follow the cash and follow the documentation and follow the support and follow the bookkeeping and accounting which recorded those transactions. That's not to say we don't talk to people, what we hide in the closet, but the basic premise was to follow the cash. And that's what we did here. In fact, I had to do a little more work than I anticipated because some of the records were not electronically available. But at the end of the day, for the 5 years in question, we analyzed over 23,000 cash disbursement transactions, which were all your cash disbursements and all the bill lists, from 2006 to 2010. And that represented over $150 million of expenditures during that five-year time period. Now, not only did we say we analyzed it, I actually think we performed a terrific service in segregating those by not only by department, but by line item, by department, by year, and then gave the council and the public 35 detailed exhibits of line by line what happened to the money in each of the departments. I compare that to respectfully, I can mean it respectfully, what one gets out of when they read your audit prepared for the statutory requirements by your municipal auditor. I know it's statutory compliant. I know it's exactly what the law says. But when I read it, I can't see what happened to $150 million. It's impossible to read and analyze it. So what we did is for 5 years, you know, sort those numbers, put them by line item, look at them, and then analytically review, you know, reasonably large changes or patterns, and pull invoices, ask questions, talk to your accounting staff about the underlying transactions, and we got comfortable on substantially everything. And where we didn't get comfortable, it rose to the level of reporting in our report. So we looked at hundreds of invoices. Okay. We looked at every single department line by line for 5 years. We asked some of the piercing questions we wanted to understand, and we looked at every single department. Okay. Even the departments under $100,000, but it was money. And then we published that for all to see and all to use and all to interpret and understand where the money went. So from my point of view, I think that is wonderfully informative. You know, certainly better than a statutory report, which respectfully doesn't do a whole lot for me in terms of analysis. So that's what we did. That was our mantra. And we found areas which warranted further explanation. We found areas which we listed in our report, which we brought to the council's attention. And that's how we, performed our forensic investigation. The next question is, and there are two similar questions. Were you given any direction or scope in conducting your audit, your forensic audit, by who and when? Second related question. Were you or anyone in your company directed by the borough manager, mayor, council, or council members as to who to interview for this investigation? Were you given either verbally or in writing a list of whom not to speak with about this investigation? So we'll take those one at a time, but the answer is no to all of them. No, we were not given any direction, nor did we solicit any direction. This is my professional judgment and consultation with my staff as to what procedures to perform and the extent to perform them. And we were certainly, definitively, not directed by the borough manager, mayor, council members, or anybody else. Next, there are, and certainly there was no list of writing who we could not speak to, non-existent. Next, two related questions. How come you stated in your contract that you would interview citizens, employees, etc., and you barely interviewed anyone? And what residents, volunteers, employees did you contact regarding the audit? And why didn't you return our phone calls? Well, as I stated before, the overriding mantra of my our investigation was to follow the cash. But to be honest with you, I wanted to find out what the proper name is, the Citizens Action Committee, was all about in their thinking, and I wanted to find that out soon, and I wanted to understand what brought this whole issue to the point where there was a referendum and a contract so I could try to address those issues. So respectfully, on the very first day of our field procedures, in addition to being here, we made an appointment to speak with whoever wanted to show up at Bob Dale's office from the Citizens Action Committee. There were two people there. There was Bob Dale, and there was Christine Wieckowski, who I understand is a former councilwoman. And I wanted to know from them, from day one of my procedures, what was on the public's mind that brought this whole issue to a head, that why we're here. And I was there with two staff people. There were three of us in all, listening, asking questions, taking notes, and we were there for, I presume, at least an hour and a half. I don't think it was too much more than that. And I wanted to hear and see whatever they had. Hear and see whatever they had. But I believe, best of my knowledge, they represented the then public. And I wanted to hear what they had to say first, on the first day of our field procedures. And after that meeting, I went back with my staff. We heard the concerns, and we took that into account completely as we then, you know, prepared, formulated what procedures we were to do. Now, were there other, respectfully, one-off single calls from citizens? Yes. They came in sporadically. I respectfully chose, I thought I had enough from this meeting as to the global issues. And I thought it was a much more expeditious use of our limited, you know, professional budget to follow the cash rather than here, you know, much smaller issues, which I presume to some extent were going to be duplicative of what I asked on day one of field work from the Citizens Action Committee. So I didn't think that was a productive use of my time, respectfully. I understand that created a little public ire, and there's no malice intended. But I was just trying to do, in my judgment, the most efficient, pointed, you know, forensic investigation that I could, and respectfully not get waylaid by hearing too much on some of what I thought would be either duplicative or smaller issues. So that was a choice that I made after speaking to the Citizens Action Committee on day one. Okay, next question. Did I contact the prior borough manager or borough accounting employees to see if they retained the field mapping for the prior accounting system? And if not, why not? I spoke to the current, at that time, the current employees, Natasha Turkin and Rich Phelan. And I thought they had a good grasp of what documentation was in the borough's files. They had been there for several years. And to me, what counts in terms of documentation is what sits in the borough's files. That's the only real documentation. So, once again, I didn't see prudent for me, because there was no respectful mapping, and I did ask that specific question, that Natasha or Richard saw or came across during their tenure as employees, I didn't think it was necessary to go any further. And when we looked at the real numbers for the first 2.5 years, the second 2.5 years, overall, it wasn't all that different. It wasn't all that bad. Was this a minor account number changes? Yes. So I didn't think that was a particularly big issue to put extra resources in. Next question is, did you send progress reports to, and how many? Who did you send progress reports to, and how many? We prepared no progress reports. We didn't send anybody a progress report. And there was nothing, to the extent that the current borough employees were aware of our procedures as we were doing them, that's what they knew. But we didn't give anybody any specific, send anybody a progress report, and there's nothing else to be found on that. Our final report is our final report. Next question. Why weren't the borough's revenues included in my audit? Well,
remand the word of audit to investigation.
And here's where I made another professional judgment. Because each year in your normal municipal audit by your independent municipal auditors, they are specifically required to check the internal controls and reporting of revenue. And they do that. And they did it for each of the 5 years in question, because you had municipal auditors for each of the 5 years in question. And they, on that level, looking at your audits, that gave me enough comfort that on the reporting of revenues, which was audited, really audited by them, and a financial statement audit according to, you know, general accepted accounting principles for governments. I thought that was a duplicative procedure. Okay, and I didn't respectfully, I didn't perceive that would be. I didn't expect that and proceed, nor do I think that would be an overwhelming area of abuse compared to expenses, which respectfully in the course of my career are much more likely to be diverted or much more likely to be miscoded. And so I decided to spend, as a professional judge, my time on the areas which had the highest and likeliest area for abuse, and understand that since you did have a municipal audit and you didn't have each of the 5 years, and from reading their audits, there were no exceptions as to reporting the revenue. I made that judgment. I mean, now did we look at the income from the allocation from some bond ordinances and money that was raised for specific projects and correlate that to the money expended for those specific projects? Yes, we did. So we didn't run away from the monies coming in. And the bond owners, respectfully, were normally multi-million-dollar transactions. So in several items where we reported on, as to the expenditures, we looked to the raising of the money from the bond ordinances, and respectfully, that's why I made that professional judgment to not spend more time than that on the revenues. Next question. Is it not the fact that the borough failed to keep electronic records or complete hard copy records a troubling aspect that should have been more thoroughly investigated. Well, I believe our procedures were sufficient. In fact, since there weren't records, I respectfully recreated what those records would have said. So it's not that I was working in the blind. So I don't really know what more I could have thoroughly investigated. When you switch accounting systems in mid-2008, there was not a record kept, either hard copy or electronic, or the ability to look at that history from that point and before. So at that point, I thought our procedures were sufficient, and it's in our report. It's reported to the governing body, and if the governing body decides that they need to take additional steps for their own purposes, for the municipality's purposes, whether to, replicate that themselves or get concurrence from somebody in the state, that's their business, but it's my business to get them that information in our report, which I did. Next question. You mentioned manual input, approximately 500 man hours for input, creating a database. Why is it that you cannot export this database into a rich text file or directly into Excel so that it might be transferred into our accounting system? Why will you not even give us a hard copy of the transactions for our record? And it quotes, I guess, a paragraph in the minutes of that day, page 2, fifth paragraph, and comments made at the council meeting. Well, respectfully, we created that database for our purposes. It was never intended to be a deliverable in our contract. And if it was anticipated to be a deliverable in our contract, I might have and would have done maybe some additional procedures on that database. But that was not a deliverable. In fact, the accounting standards, as we read them, call for our procedures and findings and recommendations. That's what the accounting investigation is all about. A project to recreate your books is a different engagement, which the borough is certainly free to hire anybody they want to. But respectfully, that was not part of our engagement. And right now, it's in a proprietary piece of software called IDEA. It's not a secret. You can buy the piece of software. It's $4,000 or $5,000. It's a forensic piece of software. And it's in that database. We have not exported. I don't know if we can export it. We have not even printed that database ourselves. It's so many transactions. We never needed a list of 23,000 transactions in one list and one piece of paper with no subtotals, no nothing. It's just a plain old database. For purposes of this, I asked my staff person, let's guess, because you can't really tell exactly, how many pages is that? And we're guessing that if we were to print that, it'd be 3,000 to 4,000 pages. And print it in a font large enough that is readable. So we use that database. We pick out a specific department, a specific line item. We summarize it, and we have 35 departmental summaries. But we didn't, as part of our engagement, we didn't anticipate, and respectfully, that's just not a deliverable under our contract. Next question. Why not look at the aggregate posting less than $100,000? They will be less likely to be looked at and more likely to be unlawful or illegal. Well, respectfully, we did. Visually, we put the, you know, all the departments above $100,000 on one page, on one summary page. And on Exhibit 35, we put all the departments under $100,000, and they're in our report, and we looked at them, and you can look at them, and you should look at them, and we subjected them to the, you know, same type of procedures. So please do not think or do not read into anything, because I happened to visually segregate them in a different exhibit, that we didn't look at them. It's just not true. We certainly did. Next question. Why is there not a corrective action list provided for your items you found to be accounting-related? Well, I didn't really prepare a list. I've, hopefully, in each area of commentary, you know, I gave our comments. I didn't think it was necessary to extract, you know, the comments included with each level. So I believe our report was is self-explanatory in our field, in this field. And now, when the governing body reads that report, they're free to, you know, take any further actions based on our findings, whether it's the lack of electronic database or maybe some controls in purchasing. We didn't hide anything, but I didn't prepare a separate summary list. It's embedded in our report with each individual area. Next question. Are there any frivolous or duplicate account codes in our system that need to be removed or combined in order to clean up and streamline our process? Well, your account codes in your system are based on the needs of the user. And it's not for me to say you have any more general ledger codes or less general ledger codes. It's for your accounting department, you know, to have a proper chart of accounts, which, the best of my knowledge, was certainly being done on a current basis. So I wouldn't necessarily see any frivolous or if an account code was there and not used, had a zero in it for 1 year, it might be because the type of transaction which occurs on an account doesn't occur every year. So I have no comment to that other than to refer that question to the borough's CFIC CFO, but I don't see anything respectfully wrong with your current chart of accounts. Okay, next question. Question says, on page 17, you made a disclaimer that the procedures used do not constitute an audit, review, compilation, ... Then you state, had we conducted an audit, ... Did you not violate the specific of the citizen-approved referendum, which required a forensic audit? Well, respectfully, the question misquotes and leaves off the operative words of my opinion. So the operative words, if they were to have been printed in the question, where I said not that we hadn't conducted an audit, we hadn't conducted an audit of the financial statements of the Borough of Washington, and we didn't conduct an audit of the financial statements of the Borough of Washington. Those are done by your municipal auditor. So that statement, once again, put in there just to limit the confusion to the outside world of what we were doing in our forensic procedures and what your outside order does. And as far as the approved referendum, I saw the referendum. I responded with the way I had to do, as limited by our professional procedures, our professional guidelines, that we don't use the word audit in a consulting engagement. And the procedures explicitly say. Now, functionality, which is the operative question, did I do anything different? I listed procedures. I agreed on procedures with the borough. There are no procedures anywhere for anybody to find on a forensic audit published by the AICPA. But what we did do is a forensic investigation, okay, in accordance with the mandate of have agreed on procedures with your client, which is exactly what we did. So we did what we had to do, what we were, you know, we did what we did, and you know, our work in accordance with professional mandate. I have no comment on the referendum. I saw an RFP, I answered an RFP, and based on that, we came to an agreement with the borough on a set of procedures, which we call a forensic investigation. Next question. Why do you get to decide how we, the council, get to use the results of this audit? Page, and they quote a section, page one, first paragraph, it's not to be used for any other purpose. That is the language which normally restricts this type of forensic work. To my client. In this case, it's a moot point. My client's a public entity. It got published on the web. I knew it was going to be distributed, so it's not restricted in any way, shape, or form. So I had it there because it's the normal language of a forensic investigation to limit it to the party that employed me for the purpose that the party employed me for. But in this case, it's 100% inapplicable. As a public body, I will know. Anything I give you is public information, and you publish it on the web, so it's not limited in any way, shape, or form. Next, how come the letter you submitted on May 10th, 2011, differs so greatly from the from Resolution 90-2001, which was passed by the council on May 17, 2001, as far as the scope of work to be done? Well, my answer to that is I independently negotiated my contract with the council, with the mayor and the council. And we came up with a set of procedures. They agreed, I agreed, and we went forward. And that was my only responsibility was to agree with my client as to what they wanted done, and we signed the contract and executed that contract. Next question. Are you aware that during the course of the audit that the borough manager ordered the destruction of documents? If so, why did you not stop this? If not, what are you going to do about it now? Evidence of wrongdoing and counting or legality may have been destroyed. Well, let me say unequivocally, I'm not aware of any documents that were destroyed, and nor do I have any evidence of it now. Next question. If there is no electronic history of the borough's finances prior to May 2008, we'll start that over again. If there is no electronic history of the borough's finances prior to May 2008, how many years of written records exist? You state there are sporadic hard copies. Does this not constitute a violation of the financial control laws that municipalities must operate under? Please specify what dates do do you have electronic information from the borough database? And which dates do you have only paper documents? And which dates do you have no information? Well, let's be clear. Your electronic ledger system, from when I started to look at January 1st, 2006, to early May 2008, was not retained. Didn't retain the software, didn't retain the information, didn't retain the rights to read only. So that ability to produce that information of your ledgers, when I looked at it during our procedures, was non-existent. As far as your electronic ledger system, starting from early May 2008 to December 31st, 2010, everything was correct there, and available, and we used that significantly, and your staff used it for us as we made inquiries significantly. I say that there are sporadic hard copies. Yes, there are some of the ledgers from 2006 to early May 2008. Yes, there were some. I have no less than sporadic hard copies of ledgers. But I do want to be and of course there were all the ledgers and paper documents from early May 2008 to December 31st, 2010. And which dates do you have no information? There are no dates which I have no information. But let's move on from the ledgers, because we've been talking about the ledgers. Let's move on to your invoices. This is part of our procedures. We went and had invoices. Respectfully, your staff did a wonderful job of locating hundreds of invoices that we requested. Hundreds. We didn't count them, okay, because we did some different tests. But we asked for hundreds and hundreds of invoices from January 1, 2006 to December 31st, 2010. And only two or three, we didn't count them, minor invoices could not be found, probably due to misfiling. We were actually amazed and pleased that you had that overwhelming percentage of invoices from 2006. I was flabbergasted. So don't be misled by thinking, by reading to anything about, you know, we have no information from 2006 to 2008. No, you didn't print out your ledgers. Your supporting documents, the invoices, your payroll information, everything which we asked for was there, except for those minor descriptions which weren't important, which were not big issues, and I can't even remember what they related to. So my hat is off to the borough for that filing and location system. It worked, and you have it. So let me go on record for that combination to the borough. Next question. What inconsistencies in specific did you note in your best efforts of the mapping? And that's page 2, paragraph 6. Although I mentioned between two systems there were some discrepancies, we used our best effort. We found nothing that was overwhelmingly different. There was once in a while a different account code. What came to our mind, we investigated and resolved it. There was a fire hydrant expense that was only for 3 years, and I guess in the early years and the late years. And we didn't see it for the other half of the audit. And when we inquired, the answer was, oh, we used another account in our new system, go look at this department, and then we found the 2 years' worth of fire hydrant expenses. That was one of the only instances I can remember of a call with a mapping change. One minor instance came up in the liability insurance, which somebody had asked me later on, where in several years your liability insurance included a workman's compensation together as one number, and in the other set of years it was two numbers. So when you look at the separate numbers and compare it to the combined numbers, all of a sudden it gets bigger because it's combined. But those were all in the same department. That was easily remembered. So I didn't find the mapping to be a significant issue at all. Okay. Moving on to the Department of Public Works garage questions, and there are a series of questions about the garage in the public works. So, who did you speak to regarding the DPW truck and fire truck purchases? In house, we spoke to Richard Phelan, your then borough manager, and of course we looked at, we'll get into later, a significant amount of underlying invoices and documents. Your next question is, where did you get the numbers for the DPW's truck? The answer to that question is, we examined the invoice document for a disbursement of $109,905, which was included on the bill list of June 6, 2006. Next question. Why did you waste so much time and money reviewing and commenting on the DPW garage and the fire truck when there had already been an extensive state audit? This was duplicative at best and a serious error of judgment on your part considering the available funds. Well, interesting enough, when we looked at that state audit, let's take the garage for example. That state audit for the garage stopped with any expenditures as of December 17th, 2008. So the state auditor stopped. He did, well, I guess he did his audit in the middle of the garage. But he never did the whole project. Our mandate was to look at all the years from 2006 to 2010. So we looked at 2006 and 2010. We saw, respectfully, it was two more years, 2009 and 2010, which the state auditor didn't look at. There was significantly, you know, by $1 million of more expenses spent in the 2 years after the state audit. So how, respectfully, how could I not look at that, okay, for that $1 million? And I know what area, which we knew was a hot topic. So I read the comment, I've answered the comment. We did the entire period, and the state order stopped in 2008. All right. Next related garage question. Do you feel that an investigation into the DPW garage-related ordinances 15-2000 and 8-2005 would have given you a more accurate assessment as to the questionable engineering and other expenditures you noted during your presentation? If so, why did you not ask the council at a council meeting to expand your analysis in regards to the DPW garage to produce a more accurate audit than that was including at least the 2005 ordinance? Do you not feel that at least including the 2005 ordinance in your review would have given you a much clearer representation of the events regarding the TBW garage and especially the engineering you noted? Well, I said our mandate was 2006 to 2010. We saw that the garage was started before then, and we saw that there were ordinances prior to that, date. We looked at every single bill payment for the garage during our period in question. I did not feel at the time of the audit that it was appropriate at that point to go back to the council to ask to expand the audit to what could have been six prior years, 2000 to 2005. We were already doing a significant work. My decision was to present our findings to the council for the years that we were required to work on. If the council thinks that there's a hole in their analysis now, based on my report, they're free to go hire anybody they want to fill that gap. But at that point in time, in the middle of my audit, I didn't feel it was necessary or appropriate to ask the council at that point in time. But at this point in time, the council is just free to make their own decisions. And if that's significant to them, so be it. They can go out and expand the scope and do it now. Respectfully, to do that would require anybody to look at six more years of bill lists compared to the five that we looked at. So that's a huge project. And personally, not my business, but I wouldn't recommend it, but it's not my decision. It certainly is the governing body's decision to spend their money. Okay. Next question. You noted on page 3, paragraph 4, expenditures dispersed in 196 payments, which included ordinances 15-2000 and 8-2005. So it is concluded that you must have looked at the expenditures for those two ordinances. Is this correct? I am referring to the word looked. By your statement in paragraph 5, you did not include the two noted ordinances in your analysis. So then why are both ordinances noted in your final product and in your statements on page 4? Were payments initiated for ordinances 15-2000 and 5-2005 starting in 2006? Well, that's a many-part question, so let's take each part at one time. The first part of the question, where I said we looked at 196 payments, which included ordinance 15-2008 and 8-2005, so it's concluded that I must have looked at the expenditures for those ordinances. Is correct? Well, not precisely, because we didn't start with the ordinances. We started with the bill payments. So, to the extent there were bill payments starting in 2006 that were appropriated by the ordinances, the answer is yes. But we looked at bill payments in 2006 going forward and did not go back and beyond our scope. We didn't have the bill list. It wasn't in our scope. And I respectfully, I wasn't going to go back to 6 years with bill lists without being contracted to do so. So only to the extent that payments were made in 2006 is the answer to that, and forward is that part of the question. Next part of the question was, by your statement, paragraph 5, you do not include the two noted ordinances in your analysis. That is true. So why then the ordinances noted in your final product? Well, I thought for information purposes, I added up the two ordinances before our project, even though we didn't zero in, starting with those, only to the extent they were paid, some payments were made after. And the one ordinance, which was which was in our period, and added those three numbers up, and came to, if I remember, $2.9 million, to give you an idea, if one were to look, what would you expect if those ordinances were the early ones, especially, we looked at the later ones, were all, you know, properly allocated to this project, you know, what the answer would be. And once again, if that question is a burning question of the council now, they can expand the procedure to do that prior work. Okay, next question. Why did you plagiarize what the state order stated regarding the fire truck and the DPW garage? Well, very interesting. I read the state order's report before we started in June of 2011, before we started. I did not look at it again until after I read this question. Not even look at it. So the answer to that question is, we performed 100% independent analysis of the records based on, you know, over $23,000 disbursements, which we saw. And respectfully, if we saw some of the same data, which the state auditor saw, and we came to some of the same conclusions, that's what it was. Respectfully, hopefully you have two competent professionals look at the same data, hopefully you should get the same result. But did I even look? I didn't even look at that document in a year, and I wrote the report a year later. Okay, a related question. I should have written them both together. It appears, as far as your repost on the fire, maybe it's a report. Should have been report on the fire truck purchase and the DPW, you basically provided the same information as the previous state audits. Can you detail how your data and conclusions were different than the state audit or Mr. Ferry's audit? Yeah, so I already explained as far as the DPW garage that the state order stopped in 2008 and we went all the way through 2010. As far as the fire trucks as it is really, once I went back to the state auditor's report, I realized he only commented on the 2008 aerial truck. He just mentions where actually during the period in question, from 2006 to there were two fire trucks. One was a 2006 pumper truck. And one was a 2008 aerial truck. So there were two separate and distinct transactions for two separate and distinct vehicles. Yeah, were there some commonality in the purchasing issues? Yeah, I think so. But there are two transactions, and respectfully, the state order missed that. I can't comment why he only looked at the later truck and not the earlier truck. But that's what happened. Okay, downtown streetscape. It is understood why you chose to look at the DPW garage, Intrafunds, and recreation, for that each points of concern and contention to the citizens who voted for this audit numerous times during the citizens' meetings and at council meetings. How did you come to choose the downtown streetscape as an area of further analysis? Well, when we were following the cash, as I told you, our mandate was, we noted that there was a significant amount of resources dedicated to downtown streetscape. To be precise, there were four ordinances totaling $2,273,265. So for $2 million worth of transactions, respectfully, I thought that was significant enough to look at, you know, whether the Citizens Committee thought it was it was a piece of contention or not, for that amount of money, when I'm following the cash, that rose to the level of our investigation. Okay. Next, we have a series of questions regarding the recreation, some of which are substantially the same. So let me read the three questions and try to answer them all at once. Did you review the rec commission / committee's receipts and expenses? How come you did not report on the misuse of funds by the borough and the funding of the recreation department activities, which were all to be individually self-funded with their own accounts? Third question, how come you did not report on the borough's misuse of recreation trust money prior to the abolition of the recreation committee? Well, let's go to the rec committee's receipts and expenses, the first question. We reviewed the Recreation Commission's 2006 to 2008 receipts to the extent they were paid for and contributed by the borough. In fact, the borough made contributions of the following. In 2006, the borough made a $70,000 contribution to the Recreation Commission. In 2007, they made an $82,500 contribution to the Recreation Commission. In 2008, they made an $86,100 contribution to the Recreation Commission. So we follow that the money coming from the borough got to, respectfully, the Recreation Commission, which we understand then at that point in time had the independent responsibility of decision making, although the transactions were mechanically processed by the borough. Regarding the analysis of the commission's committee expenses, I would refer the questioner to two exhibits, Exhibit 17, which is the Recreation Commission. So in that Exhibit 17 for the commission, we have all the expenses which the commission paid, expended for the, it was in operation for 2006, 2007, and 2008, detailed the approximately 80 individual line items by category and the comparative by year. So hopefully we gave the borough and the constituents a clear analysis. I mean, nothing like that appears in your municipal audit. And I knew that was a question of what did the rec commission spend its money on in those 3 years. And Exhibit 17 clearly defines it, line item by line, or is it 80 different line items, you know, salaries, expenses, you know, this expense, you know, for all the activities, comparative by year. So you could see what went up from year to year to year. Now, when the committee took it over in 2009-2010, that analysis appears on Exhibit 20. And we did the same type of analysis, and we analytically looked at both of those analyses to see that they made sense. And I couldn't have given more detail than 80 line items where that money went. It's now, you know, it's now a public record. In addition, we knew that there was an issue on a change order for the lifeguard stands and the starter box, so the $35,000 issue. And we looked at that in detail, and we reported that in our report. And we reported that we believe the proper approvals were given prior to the borough's disbursement of those funds. Related to that, the question says, on Exhibit 20, why are there no breakdowns for 2006, 7, and 8? Are these documents lacking in the borough's archives? Did you not contact members of the commission to see if they had any documentation that they may be able to share for this audit? And I respectfully refer the questioner to Exhibit 17. You're just looking at the wrong exhibit. You're looking at the exhibit for the committee. And if you go to Exhibit 17, you'll see the commission, and that answers exactly what you were looking for. So they're all there in at least 80 individual categories year by year. Next question. The question says, you state that the Recreation Commission received over $713,000 in past ordinances. Can you provide details to support this claim? That much money was never bonded or allocated to the Recreation Committee. And that's true. The reader read the report respectfully, misinterpreted, read it the wrong way. Because that $713,000, which I think is clearly in the report on page 11, says that those were ordinances for the borough park improvements, including the pool, and not the Recreation Commission. So it's just a misreading, respectfully, of our report. Okay, the next series of questions regarding intra-fund transfers. If the inter-fund transfers were in violation of state statute, why have you not referred them for prosecution? Surely you must know what the law is. Well, the answer to that question is my professional responsibility as a CPA doing this type of investigation is to report the issues I find to the responsible parties of my client. That's my honor. Conversely, as the CPA, I have a mandate for keeping confidential information confidential. So, in fact, in Rule 301, in the same book of ethics, it says I can't disperse confidential information to anybody else other than my client without their consent. And isn't that the right thing? Just think about your own accountant. If your own accountant finds that you put through a dinner and call it a business expense, and maybe he won't do your return, and maybe he will do your return, that doesn't make a difference. He can't go to the IRS and report it. That's your confidential information. The same thing here. I'm mandated to report to the governing body now. It's the governing body's job to make a decision what they want, if any, to report to any other authorities. That's exactly what, as I told you, what happened in when I did the Township of Vernon. At that point, they thought it the right thing to refer to the prosecutor and the Attorney General, I think. But it's not my mandate to break my client. In fact, it's my mandate to keep my client's confidential information confidential. In this instance, my client is a public entity, so it's public in the sense that here we are, but I can't go to the any authority and give anybody confidential information. Okay. On page 7, the second paragraph, you noted regarding the interfunds. It appears that this practice was instituted prior to our overview. How can you confirm the practice of transferring funds existed prior to the year 2006? Did you look into the 2005 numbers to see if the practice was a continuation of prior procedure or newly implemented in 2006? Or did I just assume that was the case? Well, respectfully, that's an easy question to answer because The 2006 financial statement, which we looked at before, is nice enough to include the ending numbers, December 31st, 2005. So I can see where this audit start, where the whole world can see, the starting point and the ending point of the 2006 audit. So at December 31st, 2005, there was an interfund transfer of $4,358,000. So looking at your 2006, I didn't have to go up to 2005, it was there. I saw that the practice had at least existed on that date. And that's where I got my information from. I didn't make any assumptions. I saw it in your own audited financial statement from your municipal accountant. Next question. Whose responsibility is it to have knowledge of good fiscal policy and acceptable practices? I ask this because if it's the manager's overview to do so, then why did you not ask the manager at the time the reasons for doing so? Though your audit findings could find any reason other than cash liquidity for the need to institute such bad accounting practices. Once again, I didn't see any need to go back to a prior manager. I looked at the intra-fund balances, and I noted as of December 31st, 2006, it was the highest balance of any of the years, of $5 million, of $536. Respectfully, being an accountant, knowing if you have to borrow money from on an interfund basis of that magnitude, to me that's just insufficient long-term budgeting. And I respectfully didn't see any need to go back to a prior manager because, you know, if you're a little bit over, all right, we went a little bit over here. But here, if you're $5 million over, it tells me that the long-term budgeting plan at that point in time wasn't in place. So I didn't see any need to pose that question to the manager at the time. Next question. When you look at the end of funds from 2006 to the end of 2010, did you look at all the interfunds or just those noted to have exceeded the $100,000 cap you chose for your analysis? No, we did not. We looked at 100% of the interfund balances as they changed, year-end balances from 2006 to 2010, and that's evidenced by the schedules which are produced in our pages 8, 9, and 10, where there are certain funds which have interfund balances of less than $100,000. Next question, next areas, miscellaneous departments, other departments. Exhibit 9, borough utilities, year over year, 2006 to 2010, includes totals. I find it questionable that the amounts of gasoline and diesel total decreased year after year while the cost of fuel increased year after year for the same time. For the years 2006 to 2008, how did this audit actually tally those sums? Well, once again, the tally is easy. We did it from 100% of your bill list. Respectfully, your observation is incorrect for the years 2006 to 2008. The exhibit clearly shows in 2006, 46,000, 2007, 57,000, and 2008, 59,000 for gasoline and diesel. The question arose is that in 2009 and 10, that amount decreased. I actually think that's what piqued the question. And the answer to that question is the reason why gasoline and diesel went down during that period is that's when the police shared services began in 2009, and those costs, you know, were covered under the shared service agreement. So that's that's the answer to that. Next question, why is it the liability insurance increased from 2008 to 2009 by 200% on Exhibit 7? And that's true. That's another area of mapping, which I told you before. And the reason it went from, it doubled from this, that line item is 2008 to 2009, is because the 2009 number includes $54,543 of workman's compensation, which in prior years is separately stated on actually on the exact same exhibit. And same thing for 2010. That includes $78,000 of workman's compensation insurance, which in the prior years, 2006-2008, you've got a different line which says workman's comp only. So really, if you add those two lines together, you see everything's comparable. But that's one area where either the mapping or the account coding was slightly different, but it's readily analyzed and solved by looking at that one exhibit. Okay, next question. What exactly is the tax redemption on Exhibit 2, and why does it go from approximately $95,000 in 2007 and 2008 to double that in 2009, then 10 times that, 10 times the amount in 10 times the amount of 2007 and 8 for 2010? We actually had the same question, and we wanted to understand what that account was all about. That account is when the borrower has a tax lien, itself a tax lien to a third party. However, when the homeowner decides to, I think the right word is redeem, that tax lien, he has to go to the borough and pay those taxes, although the borough has, I guess, received money by selling tax lien already, and therefore the borough does a pass-through disbursement to the owner of the tax lien. So the reason it jumps around from year to year is just a matter of the function of how many people in certain years redeem their tax liens, which were in arrears. So it was on a consistent basis. I heard there was one major project, I guess, in 2010 of against sort of luxury homes, which had an issue. And that year, the property owner redeemed his tax lien and borrower received money and property passed it through. So there's no cost to the borough, but the numbers do look like they jump around. But the revenue and expenses on that are equal. It's zero effect. But that's why it looks like it's not consistent. And it is not consistent. Okay. Next question. On Exhibit 22, clerk and other expenses of 2008, why is there a market increase from approximately $1,500 in 2007 to over $7,000 in 2008? And the answer is, and we had the same question, and we went and pulled the invoice, and we noticed in 2008, in fact, March 18th, 2008, there was a $6,305 disbursement for it was described as a general code book. It looked like it was a resource of the clerk that was purchased on a once-in-a-while basis. It happened to be bookkeep to that account. And that explained that increase in that one year of 2008. Next question, Exhibit 9, how is it possible that the sewage disposal notes $0 for 2009 and 2010? Respectfully, I'm sure that's a case of miscoding. What the reader was looking at was an $8,000 expense, and we assume that it was a different account code for that one item for $8,000 we did not follow up on that one specific item. Okay.
Can the gentleman speak a little more loudly? Your voice drops off.
Okay. I'm probably getting weaker as the night is going on, but I'm almost done.
No, just the vocal level is where.
Okay. All right. That actually concludes the specific questions that I received from the borough. I just have one, set of closing, comments. I believe that from May 1 and today, I've certainly fulfilled my, more than fulfilled my phase one of my contract. And I came today to answer the questions respectfully as a courtesy, because I actually believe on May 1st when I did, handed over my report, I fulfilled the terms of my contract, but I didn't want to split those hairs with the council and give everybody the benefit of the doubt. But clearly, we are now in phase two of our engagement, which requires a separate engagement letter for my continued services. And I'm glad to, if the council wishes, I am glad to negotiate a separate engagement letter for continued services, which I obviously have to approve by the governing body as to rates and specific procedures. As to not split hairs, I am here today as a courtesy, but respectfully, my professional courtesy ends today. So I'm glad to continue if the council deems they want to go forward. If issues still linger, I certainly believe that the most productive way to go forward, if there are questions, is to get such questions as writing, as has been done for tonight. That gives me the necessary time to research and be precise and accurate, and be complete and responsive to you. So I thank you for engaging me for phase one. This completes my procedures there. And if there are further procedures after tonight, I would be glad to take written questions. If it's the borough's prerogative, they want to employ my services and my firm's services, to read those and respond to them. And with that, I conclude. Thank you again for your
Mr. Snyder, I have a question for you.
Sure.
You're talking about written questions. What about verbal questions off of some of the information you passed on to us tonight?
I will agree to take the mayor's and the council's questions. I have that much respect for the body who hired me. But if the body wishes to expand that to the public, that is clearly phase two for a different day. So I'm here for your letter.
Well, I have some questions.
Of course.
I don't know if anybody else has questions. I have questions. Go ahead.
And maybe Natasha can chime in too. With respect to the question that was asked, if the interfund transfers were in violation of state statute, why have you not referred them to prosecution? Surely you must know what the law is. You mentioned the whole, you report to your client confidentiality. But even when you also answered a separate question regarding the interfunds, you mentioned that it was just insufficient long-term budgeting. And even when you presented the whole audit on May 1st, we questioned it then. And you specifically said it's poor practice, but all the bookkeeping was right, there's no issues. So is this in violation of state statute or not?
Okay. I'm not a lawyer, I can't opine on that. I hate to waive that, but I'm not a lawyer.
I was under the impression it's not in violation, it's just poor practice.
I bring it to counsel and counsel, the counsel and counsel's attorney for their evaluation. But I don't practice law, but I think it should be considered.
Anything, counsel? Is that in violation? We've been told every year when we get our audit from our auditor that, you know, we keep seeing this, and we've been trying, and for the public, every year we do try, we've been, since I've been on council, we've been slowly paying it off, but you heard the large amount. If you want us to raise taxes one year to pay off the full amount, that's what would have to be done. But slowly but surely, you know, we paid off over $200,000 last year of that so-called debt. We have not done any inter-fund transfers like that since I've been on council. But I've been told every year that it's just poor practice. There's nothing illegal about it where you would prosecute someone. Is that correct or not?
If you're asking me, I'm afraid that I cannot opine on that tonight without also getting accounting expert advice in that regard. I'm not a criminal lawyer. I think in the prior audits that have been conducted, as you have correctly stated, that there was no indication that it was anything more than a poor accounting practice.
Natasha, can you?
If you look at our audit report and the findings that our auditor writes, it always does is it is recommended that the inner funds be eliminated. It's not mandated, it's not shall, it's not must. It is recommended. Therefore, if you take with that assumption, it's a good practice not to have inner funds and all the cash to be parked in the fund where it belongs, but it will always happen. Obviously not to the respect of millions of dollars like we have in Washington.
Right. It's different at the end of the year when you might have
to... I'll give you an example. On December 31st, there is interest posted in one account that must be moved to current funds. It's just, that's how it's done. Now, nobody in the borough knows about the interest because it's posted at the end of December, and we don't know until we get the bank statement in January. That inner fund of $500 or $200, whatever that interest is, will always become inner fund on December 31st. Now, if that was a violation of the law, I can assure you 566 would have been in the bank on December 31st demanding to know what their number is because none of us would like to go to jail.
Right. Okay. So. All right. Thanks. We don't have to worry about prosecuting anyone, is my point. That's all I have.
Okay. I just had some questions, Mr. Schneider. You know, you really attack these questions, I think, overall, you know, in the best way for you. However, you know, I still have questions as to how you got to your end product, okay? I mean, you stated at least no less than six times, okay, that the money, or the, you know, where the, you know, we followed the cash, you know, you kept saying. Now, if you follow the cash, don't you have to start at the beginning? So my question to you is, where did you start? I mean, because we have various revenues that we, you know, get funds from, whether it be, you know, ordinances, taxes, you know, and if you don't look at all those things, how do you come to an end result? So in other words, because you said you did a clear analysis, you know, and you know, I don't even know if that's part of your, what is that standard?
AICPA professional standards.
Is that part of an investigation that you do an analysis?
No, but once again, the clearly said that the procedures are negotiated between us.
Okay.
And then specifically when I get down to the nuts and bolts, it's my, based on our contract, it was my professional decision what exactly to test on a specific transaction-by-transaction basis. Respectfully, I've heard your comment, and respectfully, I know this is the second time you said it, I've told you that I thought it was enough to at least partially rely on your municipal auditor, who checks that and has checked that five times, and he saw those controls. And I thought...
But you see, no one checks. And the reason that I'm asking this is because, you know, we're curious as to the whole trail of the money.
Right.
So in other words, you have to follow it. And you did state, being you brought up our contract, in your proposal and engagement letter, we will review a diverse and comprehensive selection of expenditures from various budget accounts, vouchers, purchase orders, which of course you did, journal entries, revenue transactions, okay, and credit entries. Now, I don't feel maybe that there was such a comprehensive revenue exploration, if you would, because I can't see how you followed the money. I mean, you didn't trace it from the beginning, because supposing that we had money come in, say for the DPW garage in 2002, when it was first, possibly discussed, and then money was spent for planning in 2003, and then say 2005, there's another ordinance because now, you know, you're in another phase of it, and so on and so forth. As you can see, you need to trace that to make sure that the one balances the other, no?
I followed our contract. I had some professional discretion in that contract.
Where does it say that in the contract?
It doesn't say I have to take...
It doesn't say anything about professional discretion.
Well, it doesn't say I have to trace this specific transaction. It says I'll trace, comprehensive and diverse amount of a list of transactions, which I believe I did.
Comprehensive list of revenues.
Well, you know, that's part of the pieces of all the transactions. That's part of the pieces of all the transactions.
I see.
So I understand that you have an objection to that part of my audit. You said it twice. I hear
okay.
it. I don't know how to respond more than I have.
All right. Thank you. Dave?
Okay. Yeah, I have a few questions here. We'll start and work our way back. Now, you made a comment tonight that if you didn't talk to anybody, how did you know that the starting box was a hot topic issue for the Rec Commission? Because nobody here discussed that.
I can't tell you if that came from a borough employee. Bob Elber or Cal, I respectfully, I heard that. I can't tell you where I heard it from.
That specifically, the starting blocks were a hot topic issue.
Yeah, I did hear that. My memory is not good enough to remember who told me that, but I followed up on it.
Okay, well, this gets to my point here, if I could go on with this. Now, when you were talking about the Recreation Commission, you were talking about receipts and expenditures. Now, the receipts that you were talking about, were they the donations that the borough gave in 2006, 7, and 8, $70,000,
$82,000, and $86,000?
The
amounts that I recited.
Okay.
Yes.
So those receipts.
And you can see that. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So they spent that money there. Did they spend any additional money?
Yes.
Well, where did that money come from? My point about receipts.
Okay. Yeah. I was understanding they were collecting some user fees.
Okay. It's hard to understand that, you know, we're staying within the budget. They're collecting user fees. But if they're spending this much money, the borough gave them this, we need to know where that other money came from, correct? Wouldn't that make accounting sense?
That's the same question as Mr. Torres had.
Okay. Well, that was specific to that specific, to the recreation there. Question 18, you made the comment that the general ledger for a period of about 18 months was non-existent.
I said for the period of 2006 through about May 8th, if I remember correctly, 2008, your old electronic system is non-functional. There's no electronic history.
Okay.
From your old electronic system.
From the electronic, but you also said that there was a problem with the manual documents because it was sporadic. You used the word sporadic.
Yeah, there were, from what I saw, the history of those transactions for the electronic data was not printed out and maintained in hard copy, which I thought respectfully would have been a good alternative to retaining, other if you want to retain and pay for the software on an ongoing basis.
So how do we reconstruct that? Because doesn't the general ledger include revenues?
Well, I reconstructed the disbursement part by 23,000 payments on bill lists for 5 years.
Okay.
Which we assembled.
But for layman's terms here, the general ledger is kind of like the ledger you keep in your checkbook, in your personal checkbook, right?
Okay, yes.
So you make deposits into your checkbook, and then you write your checks, and you subtract that from the ledger in your checkbook, and it gives you a balance. So if we're missing documentation, how do we come up with a balance in the general ledger?
I'm not sure when you transferred, when those monies were transferred over, early May 2008.
But I'm talking about the sporadic hard copies that you had
today. You want to know how do you look at those general ledgers for the ins and outs?
For back then, when you had sporadic.
Like you can't. They're non-existent.
They're non-existent.
There are some sporadic printouts, but okay. The comprehensive documentation, which I would have wanted in lieu of a...
But it's not there.
Not there.
Okay, so if I made a mistake in our checkbook, I would know that when I reconcile it. Aren't general ledgers supposed to be reconciled?
Yeah, those were reconciled at the time. And historically, yes, I believe. And it was reconciled and audited. So I'm confident that the carry forward balances, which they transfer at the
but
day.
But we don't know that.
Well, you have municipal auditors.
He only does 10%.
No. They opine on 100% of your financial statements. He may choose to test pieces, but he opines on 100% of the financial statements.
Okay.
So I am.
That would be a question then we ask for our auditor.
You can, but I'm.
But I'm happy. Your information. You just rebuilt what you had, and it coincided with what our auditor provided to you, so it was good.
Well, I didn't say that. I rebuilt.
That's how I'm interpreting what you're saying.
I didn't really compare mine to theirs. Okay. I took 100% of your bill list.
Excuse me, Mr. Snyder.
Yes.
You just said that you took the information that was provided by our municipal auditor, and that's what you based your information on.
No, nothing.
You just said you didn't do that.
Okay, let's be clear. There's nothing I didn't use those carry forward. I was confident the borough for their use. I mean, that's for their use when the systems were transferred, that they reconciled those balances and carried for them.
And you got that from our auditor, based on the financial.
I partnered from your auditor. Partly from, from some confidence on your current employees. I didn't necessarily use those in my work, which is probably why we're getting confused.
Okay. But you rebuilt the general ledger.
Nope. Don't say that. That's not true.
Okay.
All right.
So how did you come up with numbers that matched our auditor?
I didn't say we matched your auditor. I said I took every single check that you wrote on every single bill list.
Okay.
And compiled the disbursements and sorted it and analyzed it and printed that out department by department comparatively for 5 years by general ledger account.
Okay. So you checked all our bill lists?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you think that a $1.5 million mistake would jump out at you?
I would hope it would.
Well, there's nothing in this report that talks about that.
Okay. I don't hope it would. I don't know what you're referring to.
Well, see, listen. There was a check. Let's go back and talk about the TANs, the tax anticipation notes. You remember them? for $1.5 million. They were due in February. If the check was sent out in February, you would have seen that on the bill list in February, correct?
I would see the day it was approved by the council.
By the council. Okay, so did you actually check the bank statements as to when that check was cashed?
No, we did not do that.
Okay, for those of you, I don't think you were on the council then, but you remember the conversation. We had a $1.5 million check for tax anticipation notes that was sent to the lending institution in February, March, or April. Here's the problem. It didn't get approved until May by the council because it was discovered that that check was sent out before it was approved by council. Don't you think that's something you would have seen?
Not necessarily.
Why not?
Because I would have looked at your tax anticipation. I would have taken a sample. I may not have seen that specific one. I may not have tested that specific instance.
All right. Listen, I don't want to seem like I'm being adversarial, okay? But a $1.5 million bill.
Remember what you said about your old auditors looking at 10%. We didn't. I may have compiled 23,000 transactions, but and I analytically review them, and what rose to our attention, we pulled invoices, hundreds of them, and did our further analysis.
Okay, but
and you know, if that one instance, which you point out,
was the biggest
of a delay, was not one of the ones we chose. It wasn't one of the ones we chose.
Okay, but you did review anything over $100,000 or more.
No, I categorized that on a separate list. It was easy to read.
Okay. I have just a couple more questions. Let's see here. You made the comment early on that after you spoke to the two individuals that you spoke to on day one, that you thought it would be, the information that would be provided with them would be duplicated.
No, I said if...
Duplicity, I think, is the word you used.
If I were to go further to other people, I would think that was going to be duplicated, and I just thought it was a better expenditure of my professional time to follow the cash you would. I actually heard what I wanted to hear from that first meeting.
Well, you said about smaller issues. They're vitamin smaller issues.
I understand that. I do want to ask you, though, about the two or three invoices that were not found. And you said that, you know, don't be misled. Everybody did a great job. If they couldn't find the two or three invoices, did you know what the invoices were and for how much?
No, I did not know that. They weren't critical to our analysis. I had that discussion with my staff person today because I knew somebody would ask that question, and I wanted to make sure they weren't critical to our analysis. And they weren't any significant.
But you needed the invoices to bounce off the...
To verify the bill list. I requested the invoices because we were looking at an area, probably pulling numerous invoices for an area, and in some cases where there was one invoice missing for an area, I didn't think it was, it didn't rise to the level of a comment that I was unsatisfied with an area.
Okay. I would just like to go back to your proposal or your agreement letter here too for a minute. It says that you, in phase one, you will perform initial investigative procedures in this phase on certain material that we will provide to you. And they include the expenditures, vouchers, purchase orders, journal entries, revenue transactions, and credit entries. And then it says here, in accordance with your request, on page one, the very dear mayor and council, in accordance with your request, we have analyzed certain accounting records. What accounting records did we request you look at?
No, I'm just saying that I'm not going to produce, that I'm asking you to provide me your records, and your accounting department opened your door
It means I wasn't going to independently around you find your records, that the borough was going to open its doors to me, which it certainly did.
But I'm kind of confused by that. With your request, we have analyzed certain accounting records.
Yeah, your request being the contract to engage me to begin with. Your request being the engagement.
Okay. So then I will close with this. Your professional latitude talks of, you said that, mentioned that to Mr. Torres,
right,
about the revenue transaction and credit entries. Right?
Yes.
Okay. If you can just tell me why, professionally, you don't think you needed to look at revenues.
I looked at those pieces of revenues, the bond ordinances, the funding of the rec commission, the intercompany, interfund transfers. So we didn't ignore 100% of revenue.
I understand that.
But I chose those pieces, which I made a professional decision, which I understand people are challenging, and you have the right to challenge that. But I had the right to make that professional decision. So I looked into transfers, those bond ordinances, I looked at the funding of the rec commission, okay? And I relied on the controls and the audit of your municipal auditors. So I didn't have to, I believe I didn't have to go further. I was better, my time was better spent elsewhere.
And I
don't know how to answer once again.
To dovetail off of that, but don't you think, our biggest source of revenue is taxes. You don't think that would have been something?
I wasn't worried about the control over taxes. I thought your orders would have that hand in hand. And that's something, those controls and checks. So I wasn't worried about that as a source of abuse. I thought my time was better spent in many other areas of disbursements. And that's a judgment I made. And
prior to making that judgment, did you inform anybody here in the borough that you weren't going to look at this?
No, we do no status reports. Once again,
that's not what I understand. I understand that you had spoke with the manager on a couple of different occasions. Verbally update him as to what was going on.
He was providing me with information. We were working on an ongoing basis.
And you provided him with some information.
We were conversing because I was proposing questions to him, and he was supplying me data. But it wasn't that, here's where my report is. That didn't happen.
No, I understand that. And again, one last question.
Sure.
If we only took in $100 million, how could we spend $150 million over a five-year period.
Respectfully, some of that money is, especially the one in the interfund, some of that money is recycled, I'll call it.
Because so that would have meant we would have had to spend $10 million more a year.
Some of that money is, and we saw that some of that money is recycled. The rec commission was a little perfect example of that.
See, that is where I don't buy that, to be quite frank with you, because an expenditure is an expenditure, whether it comes from the rec commission or whether it comes from the borough. The borough paid it, but they paid it out of the rec commission. So if the borough gave the rec commission $70,000 and the rec commission spent $70,000, that $70,000 that the borough gave them is non-existent anymore. It's a wash, zero, zero. Correct?
Mm-hmm.
So what you're telling me is that if the borough gave the rec commission $70,000, they spent the $70,000, you credit $70,000 to the borough and $70,000 in expenditures to the rec commission?
Well, the borough has a disbursement of 70. The rec commission has, so far, income of 70. The rec commission spent that 70.
So that totals 140, and that's where the numbers get skewed.
Yeah. That's...
I'm done. Thank you.
Isn't it true, though, Mr. Snyder, that if you had looked at, like, all the user fees and the other revenues, okay, for just even the things over $100,000, you would have seen, you know, a completely different picture. You might have had written a completely different report to us, right?
I do not believe that. In my heart, I do not believe that. Otherwise, I would have done something different.
All right.
I know you believe that.
I do believe that.
I understand that. And I respect that.
Okay.
But I don't believe that. I don't believe that.
Answer this one question.
Sure.
Of all the revenues, okay, that come in, that came in over that five-year period, what percentage would you say that you actually looked at?
I haven't tallied that.
Okay, just give me a guess.
Oh, I told you the area.
1%?
I haven't tallied that.
0.05? Or just not even, it's negligible?
I haven't tallied that.
Okay.
I told you the area. I just didn't just think about it.
All right.
Well, thank you. I'm done.
Okay. Any other questions?
Thank you. If you wish to employ me further, I'll be back.
We'll find you.
Thank you for coming in and really addressing all the questions.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Okay. That takes us to the minutes of the regular meeting of May 15th.
Make a motion to file. We'll approve the minutes.
Sorry. Thank you. Any discussion on the minutes? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any abstentions?
I agree.
Correspondence. Ms. Turchin, would you like to discuss the ACH payments with us?
Yeah. Last meeting, Christine distributed my memo to you. I'm just here to answer any questions or get a direction if you want to see presentation, if you want to do anything else. Sure.
If you could just look at the Excel spreadsheet you created. So I'm a little confused. I agree we should stick with the New Jersey one. So let's just look at, from the purpose of my question, Edmonds and the CityNet. What would be the total annual cost to the borough for each? It's kind of confusing. Like, I don't understand. Yeah. I see CityNet was going to have that one-time setup. That's the only one. What's that taxes and sewer column? And then you see, your scenarios. And those are, different numbers. So, I'm confused.
Well, there's the cost that will be charged to the borough, and then there's the cost that will be charged to the revenue. You take Edmund's system. I have taxes and sewer because it's two separate modules, and they will run separately for payment. So the Edmund's will charge $600 for the taxes to have ACH payments and $600 to charge for the sewer.
Mm-hmm.
So it's $1,200 to the borough.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for every payment that our resident will make, the Edmunds will charge $1.05 to the resident.
Oh, okay. So for $250, you multiply $1.05.
Correct.
Okay.
So our borough residents use the system 260 times. Now, keep in mind that taxes are paid four times a year and sewer is paid monthly. So $250 is not that hard to get to.
Sewer is quarterly, isn't it?
Well, you can pay quarterly or monthly. It's up to you. Some people pay monthly, but it was quarterly, so it's four and four.
Mm-hmm.
So it's eight payments a year. But $250 is not that hard to get there. I anticipate that number being much higher.
Right. Okay.
Now with CityNet, they will not charge our residents. They will only charge the borough. And I think the cost is—I don't have my spreadsheet, but I think the cost is $750 for the.
Right. So okay. So basically, then it's. The $1,000 setup fee, and then it would be $1,250 for taxes, $750 for that. And normally, though, all right. So wait, what's that? $1,250 plus $750.
$2,000,
and then $1,200. All right. So it's about $800 more to the borough on an annual basis. The residents would not get charged anything else.
Correct.
Either way, though, whether we did Edmunds or CityNet then, it would be a little bit of money to be raised in taxation. You know, a little bit. You have to raise either the $1,200 or the
$2,000. Well, or absorb it through other cuts in the budget.
Right, or use, since we, well, for the sewer, can you already use the sewer fees that has already?
Correct. Sewer will be paid out, sewer taxes will be paid out, taxes.
Okay. All right, that makes a lot more sense for me now.
Now, my scenario is just, you know, number of payments, and if the residents do love the system and they utilize it a lot, then the $1.05 that our residents will be paying adds up to a high number.
Right. But then, on the other hand, if you look at it like, I'm torn, I don't know which way, you know, when you think of any other, you know, if you go to Ticketmaster, you pay a service fee, or if you go to the ATM machine, you pay a service fee, so maybe those residents that want to use it pay its fee.
Well.
Because we don't know how many people are going to use it.
Correct, and I felt, like, in Bridgewater, I use Ticketmaster, and I actually charge residents $1 to process the transaction. Now, the fees that I collect are going straight forward improving my website and improving anything that relates technologically for my residents to be able to obtain, you know, applications online, or certificates, or, you know, anything that relates to my website.
Oh, so even, all right, so you are, okay, so you're still charging them a fee?
I'm charging my residents, correct. But I'm talking about, I have 16,000 line items for taxes and 16,000 line items for sewer. So it's a nice revenue that I can use to improve my website.
All right, okay.
Mr. Torres?
Yeah, Natasha, out of your experience, though, you've dealt with Edmunds and CityNet both, so which one would you, you know, feel that is probably better?
I've never seen Edmunds ATM payment. You know, I've seen CityNet, and it works beautifully, and, you know, the response time is basically a phone call away. I can't say anything good or bad about Edmunds, I've never used it, but they're a big company, I don't think they would put a product out there that wasn't sufficient. The difference is the CityNet, we are the manager of the software, so we upload the files to the bank, and we see the files. With Edmunds, as to what I understand, is the third party is managing it, and then they will send us the file to upload. But it's not a big difference. You know, we ultimately get the money and the report of who paid.
Off the top of your head, about how many residents in your other town do use this? At the percentage, like, you say half the residents use it, half don't?
Well, I'll tell you this way. I collect, in the first year, I've collected over $5,000, so there's at least 5,000 ACH payments that were made. Now, that's putting aside, I also have credit card payments, and that's putting aside the credit card payments that the residents utilize online.
And we're not looking at credit card payments.
We're not looking at credit card payments.
There's like direct deposit kind of thing.
Can either of these two companies add on other user fee kind of payments as well?
I definitely can tell you that CityNet can.
They can.
I don't know about Edmunds.
That's what I thought. Okay, so in other words, supposing that we want to.
I'm sure there's going to be capability, but I'll have to check.
Like, for example, to do all the dog licenses or whatever, and any other user fees. Maybe that could be incorporated.
If you pay online the dog licenses, because you still have to show up to get your little metal hat.
Right, okay, maybe that was a bad example on my part, right, okay.
For rabies.
Right, but, yeah, there's possibly so many other user fees, right.
So you can pay the fee online, but you need to show up to get your little yellow.
Yeah, okay, right. Okay, well, that's it.
Any other questions on that?
The payment from the mortgage companies, financials.
They send us a pay?
Send you a fee. Send a check.
Well, they send us a check, and then they send a tape with every block and lot that they're paying for, so we don't have to manually repost into the system, just upload.
Okay, so they didn't use that?
No.
Okay.
It's really for the individual residents that don't have the mortgage, and.
Do you know how many that is?
Statistically, it's usually half, but it depends on the town.
I'm sorry, I know Councilman Boyle has a question. Do you find it helps improve your collection rate?
Absolutely. It improves our collection rate, it also improves the time of collecting, because, I mean, I only have two people in another town for 32,000 line items, and when I get a file like this, it's a matter of clicking the button, and all the information is posted, and the more people pay online, the less my clerks are keying in the checks and scanning and taking it to the bank, and the money gets to the bank faster.
Right.
Because when that file is completed, the money is in the bank versus.
And you get the cash more on hand.
Correct, versus I have to prepare the badge, and I take it to the bank, and the bank processes, it just gets there faster.
Mr. Boyle?
Thank you, Mayor.
Natasha, after the line item says sewer, you have some words, yes, yes, and no. What are those answers? What are those questions?
It's going to myself, but...
It's charged to the municipality.
That's the one a little bit to the left. Right after sewer, $600, it says yes.
Oh, yeah, the charge is to residents.
Oh, it's charged to the residents.
Yes, they charge to the...
Oh, it was, it moved over.
Right.
All right, thank you.
Would
this, would we put this on our regular borough website? We have enough room for that?
It's just two little icons, it's not huge.
Okay.
It's a button that says pay your taxes or pay your sewer line, and you click on the button, and then it takes you to a site where you can pay.
Oh, I got you. And then who at the borough monitors the payment, or does it, these people monitor payment?
The CityNet or Edmunds, they both will monitor and maintain all the data.
Okay.
The borough website, I don't want any company that will make us retain the data, because I don't want to be responsible for somebody's checking account.
Do they send out the delinquent notices, or they send it to the borough?
No, we send out the delinquent notices.
They send to us.
What, you know, and I'm sure Edmunds has something like that too. What CityNet has, which is a new feature, if your tax sale date changes, because they accept payments throughout the year, it's not just the busy 10 days of the year, because you post the files there, so you know exactly how much delinquent they are, the interest is calculated daily, and you can input the date where you want those taxes to stop being paid online. If it's like 5 weeks before the tax sale, you can stop collecting taxes online.
So you would set that all up prior, so they would, or we have to do that here with one of our clerks?
Yeah, you can set it up prior, and if anything changes, if you always have control to go, there is an administrative feature, you can go and change anything you want.
And are there hidden costs every, for a change every time, do you know?
I don't anticipate them changing.
Okay. Thank you, Mayor.
Anyone else?
There was a contract though, right? I mean, that you signed with them, so in other words, supposing we decide on one of these two companies, then they'll send us a contract like anything else, and we'll just approve it, and that's it.
Well, I'm gonna make the motion that we move forward with CityNet to start allowing residents to pay their taxes and sewer online.
I'll second that.
Okay, is there any further discussion on that?
Yeah.
Okay.
You can wait this time.
You go first.
Mr. Boyle.
That dollar per transaction, are we gonna include that as well, that Natasha was talking about?
No, that's not in my motion. That additional user fee?
Yeah.
No, that's not in my motion.
No, I know, okay.
That can always be added at another time, should we deem it necessary, correct? Yeah.
Correct.
Okay.
Thank you.
Leave it.
My question is, when would we start this, and we did not budget it for it this year, so would we have the money? Do you think there's somewhere that we have money?
Let me talk to the CityNet, maybe they would like to...
Get our business?
Get our business.
Okay.
Put it on a trial basis, and then we'll start paying.
That's a good idea.
Mr. Hagan, do you have something?
Yeah, do you think it would be wise to have these people come in and give a presentation to the public as to what it is that they're doing? Instead of us doing it, you know, like, do they supply advertising? Do we have to advertise it? How are the people going to know?
Well, we can put it as a message on the tax bill when the bills go out that we're now accepting NCH payments online.
Perfect.
But
when would that
it happen? Is going to be a little icon on it.
The bills are going to go out July, August.
And we can do the email by.
Okay, that refers back
automated
to
automated clearinghouse.
Senior.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I only heard the
you
answer
have
what you said.
Generation that don't know computer.
There will be a better description. We're just using the acronyms here.
Okay. So again, if we're going to go on and do this starting in July,
CityNet has come in and well, there's no way we can do it in July because we need to build interfaces.
I think where we're going to get the money first before we do.
We can have CityNet come and do a presentation if you want to.
I would prefer that. Instead of jumping into it and say we're going to do it, sign an agreement, and we don't know how much it's going to cost. I mean, we know how much it's going to cost. Where are we going to get the money?
I have other questions, too, probably for them, so I think it's a good idea.
Okay. How about July 17th? When do the bills go up?
Well, the motion's on the floor. I think the vote, and if it fails, then you
need to address the motion.
Yes.
So I say yes.
Okay. Let's do a roll call on it.
Gleva?
Yes.
Boyle?
Yep.
Torres?
I'll abstain for now.
McDonald?
Yes.
Higgins?
Now, we should, I guess, have the motion to have, to invite them in.
Oh, all right, you want to...
Okay.
Second.
All right. Any discussion on that?
On 717?
If they can.
Yes, if they can come.
Invite them to 717 if they're able.
Sure.
Okay, any discussion on that? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? And, Ms. Turchin, that puts you up again for the bond refunding. Okay, clerk's going to hand out.
Distributing two-page, yes, now, if you recall, several months ago, we talked about refunding bond ordinance, and when we were talking about refunding, I told you that what I anticipate to do is take an outstanding note and roll them along with that refunding bond, so we can save some costs as far as the cost of issuance of the bond, because otherwise, we would have to pay for the refunding bond, and we still have to pay for the notes to become bonds. And the reason we're doing that is, if you look at the first page, it has our existing debt, and then it has a second column that talks about bond anticipation notes. Any note that is outstanding can only be outstanding 10 years, 5 months, and 1 day. That note's been outstanding for a long time, and what we have left after we pay this year's small principal is we have 6 years left to pay off the note. I believe that 6 years will put too much burden on the next 6 years' budget. So what I'm doing is converting that note into a serial bond, which will extend the life of the payment. And it's the second page, if you look, we have until 2027 to pay it off. And our debt, if you look at the first page, our debt would be from $807,000 this year to $1,167,000, which is, our budget cannot afford that type of increase in debt payments. And this is, while it's still an increase in almost $50,000, it's much easier to absorb increase. So, and on July 3rd, you will get a resolution from the bond council approving or rolling this note into the serial bond that will be issued along with the refunding bond. And I'm giving you this information so when that resolution gets here on July 3rd, you know why you're having that resolution.
You're saying that the budget won't tolerate it because of the 2% cap?
No, well, the debt is not inside the cap, but okay. If you go from 800,000 to 1,000,001, that's a $300,000 increase. That's almost 10 cents increase on the budget.
Okay.
Before we even did anything with increase in cost.
Okay, I was just curious as to how you came at...
Right, it's not a cap.
...that determination.
So if we don't do it...
You only have 6 years to pay off the note.
Right, and but the total would be what, the...
So now we're going to 15 years.
Yeah, so what's the bottom line more in interest then?
Well, if you look at the bond anticipation note, if you pay it in 6 years, you'll pay 2.9. If you go for 16, for 15 years, you'll pay 3.3, so you'll pay extra $400,000 in interest. But just as a side note, back before my time, you had a sewer note that was coming on their 10-year anniversary, and it was too much to pay, and you didn't roll it into serial bond on time, and that's what actually created almost $900,000 in shortage in sewer that we're now paying as an interfund over so many years. So if you don't act now, only rolling this bond along with the refunding, because the cost could be combined and it will be cheaper on both issues, we either need to make a conscious decision that we will pay it in 6 years, or we need to decide that, you know, if we don't pay this time, we either have 6 years to pay or we'll have to roll it into serial bond and then pay higher costs on rolling it later on.
Natasha, is there any way to lock in our interest rate?
With the bond, with the note, you're selling it every year.
Right. Good.
Okay, so
So we don't need any action on this tonight?
No.
This is just informational?
No, I just wanted to answer the questions if you have any before the resolution gets here.
I'm sure there will be more as time progresses. Okay, anything else for us, Ms. Turchin?
That's it.
Thank you.
Thanks. At this point, I'd like to open up the audience portion for remarks, petitions, statements, and testimonies from guests. Ms. Cerami, I saw your hand first.
Hey, Ms. Cerami, I'm Washington Computer District. I just wanted to thank the staff and all the volunteers from the car show this past Saturday. It was great turnout. Parking lot had maybe four spots empty. It was packed full, and it's just a lot of work behind the scenes. Nobody ever realizes when things go right. Everybody notices when they go wrong. So I just wanted to thank Christine Blanchard, DPW, and John Byrd, the Washington Police Department, and also the volunteers of the Washington Emergency Squad as well. Thank you so much.
Mr. Dalva?
I hesitate even to respond to this, but I think it's maybe it'll clear up some questions in a few people's mind because it was misrepresented. In response to what was said tonight, certainly don't want to cost the borough more money. I think it was a good idea what he had in terms of the auditor coming and wanting to speak to the citizens group, but that's not what was presented.
I saw you nodding your head.
Yeah. So I want to clear that up. He had called me. And I said, I'm not the person to meet with. I'm an organizer, and I can help get a group together. But you want to speak to former council people. You want to speak to former employees. You want to speak to people in the that comprise the citizens. And you're probably going to get more insight and more direction if that's what you're looking for. He said he didn't want to do that. I said, well, meeting with me is going to be a waste of your time. I said, can I bring at least a former council member? And that's how Christina got on to that meeting. But it was a refusal to meet, and I said, well, this is not representative of a citizens group whatsoever. So I made it clear right up front.
That's not how he represented it, though.
Yeah, so, you know, we were just two citizens, and I made that clear up front. So that's not what he was presented to you, and that was not correct. So I just want to clear that up for what it's worth. It doesn't mean, to some people, it doesn't mean anything, but just so at least it's out there. We actually offered the first night when the resolution was passed and they hired him out back there. I said, I'm happy to meet with you, or the citizens group is happy to meet with you if you want anything. He said, no, I didn't think that would be too wise, it would be tainting. I said, I'm backing away. I said, whatever you request, you request. You do your thing, that's why you're hired. There was a couple of things that he presented the night when he was hired, okay, which really ran contrary tonight. He really said to you, if you recall, as a council, he was going to give you updates. He was going to keep you posted and give you updates all along the process. And he said tonight he didn't, okay? Just a point of clarity. I mean, I appreciate him going down the whole list and answering the questions, but there was some wrong information, so I want to just clear that up. And also, as Dave tried to point out, in the contractual agreement, which I believe he did not follow, revenues were clearly stated that they would be included into that, into the research, and revenues weren't totally clearly followed and researched. There's some things that he said he would do when he did the presentation that I was privy for, okay, that maybe everybody wasn't privy for, and the council certainly was, that he did not follow through on. Now, that's up to the council and what they want to do and how they want to handle that, but I just want to just clear up so that there's no misunderstanding there. There's some things that were in the contract that were not followed through. One other point, and I don't know where people want to go with this, if they want to go anywhere with it, is that violation of inter-fund transfer has come up again and again in every audit. You pointed that out. And it's an issue that I think we need to really focus on, citizens, council, everybody, to try to correct so we don't keep recurring that same thing again.
Well,
you're going to see it for many more years.
I know.
We pay it all off.
I know. Well, that was a good solution.
Well, what she said too, with the interest that comes in December 31st, that's going to be an interfund every year.
Right. But the good thing is, she did say that the numbers will get smaller and smaller.
Yeah, 500.
Yeah,
500.
Yeah, as far as the past interfunds, yeah.
Yes, it's better than 1.5 million.
Yeah, they will get smaller and smaller.
So we made a boo-boo way back when,
right.
And we're paying for it.
That is being corrected now.
Which is good. And I think if we look at a consistency in the audits that were handed to us from all the internal audits, we're going to find three or four items that occur again and again. And we were told by the former manager that they were addressed, but they weren't all addressed, and we talk about that a little bit. And those have reoccurred again and again. And I think it's a good idea if we look at that audit along with all the other audits and this one and see which reoccurring items are coming up again and again. That's a good direction for the council and even as the citizens to work together, try to go in the right direction. I think what Natasha proposed there was refreshing for a council to have information ahead of time, not the night of, not the morning of, not an hour before, or not when you sit at a bench and have to make a judgment call. It's not fair to you guys or anybody else. What she did was present ahead of time, look, this is coming, this is why you want to go this way, this is what it's going to do. I think what we need that as a council. So that was refreshing. The one other thing I wanted to say is that I don't know where this goes, because I don't know law, but I do think we really need some serious legal counsel here. And one of the issues that came up in the audit again and again and again was that we're not getting clear legal counsel on some of these issues. That's why we're making mistake after mistake after mistake. One thing was, and I don't know where we are with this, but it was a referendum. That has legal ramifications. 86% citizen vote. And I'm not suggesting to go somewhere with it or not to go somewhere with it, but if we don't follow that, does it have some legal implications? Because it was a vote. So we really need to look at that as citizens and as a council. Now, I'm not proposing anything. I'm just saying it's an issue. Ethical but legal too, and we need to get some counsel on that, some direct, clear counsel on it. I think contractually, we were very clear as a council and a citizens group, it was to be an audit. Okay, even
if you remember, Mr. DeLaba, when this first came up, you know, we had quite a discussion about what is a full forensic audit, because there was no legal definition.
Absolutely. And you remember, Scott, too, I think Rich then went ahead and actually did it in print. Here is what a forensic audit is. And we have that document, so I don't have it with me. But he presented that to get clarity for us. Okay?
Yeah, and so, that was kind of it wasn't a legal definition.
Right. And I think if we had the contract, the referendum, reviewed by council at that time and say, hey, whoa, time out, we may get into some trouble here, this is not following it to the letter of the law, we wouldn't have so much ambiguity right now. I think the book he brought up, I wasn't even aware of, but we could have used that legally to say, okay, we've got to follow these practices to define them better for us so we know what we're talking about. Because we didn't. We didn't know what we're talking about. Anyway, that's it. There's a couple other points, but I hit the major ones. But I wanted to clear that one thing up because that was not how it was presented. It was not correct.
Okay.
Any? Good?
Thank you.
My name is Ann Hardiman. I'm a resident of the borough. I haven't been to a meeting in a long time, and in many ways, I'm impressed. I've been on the periphery in terms of interest with regard to this forensic audit, and I think your question was interesting in terms of what his obligations were in reporting to his clients. In terms of, he's a licensed CPA, he was hired for a forensic audit in contrast to the ordinary common phraseology of an audit. And forensic, by definition in my book, carries the implication of investigative, which in my mind, just because you're starting something in 2006 doesn't mean you don't go back and check what led to 2006 in order to better handle what your contract requires you to do to present an investigative audit. I think the lack of communication, I think another key thing, and if I may say so, when I was more active in municipal things, I think contracts are sometimes routine sort of things that you can buy, almost the kind you buy in a stationery store, and the needs of a municipality are specific in whether they're having sidewalks put in, or sewers, or just the multiplicity of things that you have to handle, and that's why you have a municipal attorney who should know the community well enough should know the background of the referendum and what it implies and what it requires. And in the contract, with another professional being brought in, should be incorporated specifics that then will preclude some of the problems that apparently have occurred. And it's sort of, well, you didn't say that, so I didn't do it. Or the contract maybe, I haven't read the contract, but maybe, I know there were some other contracts where things just weren't specific enough and the community got had. I can't prove what it did to the tax rate sort of thing, and I'm not talking tax rate. I believe in paying for municipal services, but they've got to be qualitative. They've got to be, the professional ones have to be supervised in some way. And anyway, I swore I wouldn't speak tonight, but I've had my say. I thank you.
Thank you.
And I wish you well.
Thank you.
Penny Shaw, Twin Cities School Street.
I took copious notes tonight, 5 pages of notes from what he said. I only have, I think, a few questions here. One she brought up regarding progress reports, and then Bob brought it up as well. Why was he not, I mean, maybe he was, but I'm not sure. Why was he not asked to supply progress reports? Or was he?
I
know we've kept him bringing
it
up in council.
Personally, and he said he wouldn't.
There were a couple of times it was kind of addressed. We would ask for an update, and the manager would give us more like, you know, he's on target to complete it within the year deadline sort of thing. And the main thing that out of when he said he would give us status to, one of the main things that was said was if there was a red flag or something glaring, he would let us know right away. So we never received any of those type of updates. So it was almost like no news is good news. You know, we were letting him do his job without taking away dollars of him having to come in here to give us an oral report, which would again go into that $87,500.
But he could have physical sent you a report. He didn't physically have to come. He could have given you a physical report.
Right.
And to be honest, he should have. I mean, he really, really should have, because then you would have known whether he was on contract, I mean, on point for his contract along the timeline of this process.
But it was the kind of thing where he didn't focus on where he just worked on 2006. That was another reason with the update. It's not like he could say, oh, I completed 2006. They were looking at different years, different things throughout the whole thing.
It's not a year thing. It's a topic thing. Because he did an analysis request the years, chose areas of analysis, further studied those analysis, and he should have really said, I'm currently working on the DPW, if nothing else. I'm currently working on a streetscape. I'm currently working on rec. I'm currently working on anything under $100,000 right now. He should have at least said that. If nothing else, he should have given you something. In my years of working with different companies and different things, you always get a status update, especially with the bill. You get a progress report.
If I could interrupt, I think that's a learning experience for the members of the council. And every time we ask for a report or, you know, employ someone to provide us with information and a final report, I'm sure that in the documentation that awards their services, that will be in there, that they will provide periodic updates to the council that we will be able to hold them to. So it's
at
kind of a learning experience.
At least when he gives you the bill.
Right.
He should, because when I was working for the engineering firm, every invoice I sent out,
wouldn't happen again.
I had to give them a cost report. Sometimes glass.
Learning experience.
Okay. All right. And, well, the contract did say, you know, oral and written report, so.
You never got written.
Right.
Any. To you guys, at least, he never got any. Next, he mentioned the controller's report, which I have. Thank you very much. Which I had a very hard time getting.
That's the audit you have there.
Sorry, the audit report.
Right.
I have the controller's report.
That's another, maybe you have that one.
Yeah, I just have that one. To what I have here, I cannot verify that it was just 2008. To my notes here, it included some of 2009 in the controller's report. Am I incorrect on that?
Off the top of my head, I don't recall, Penny. Probably. He was here through the beginning of 09, but that was it.
Okay. So he was incorrect.
He was not much into 09.
Okay, but he was incorrect. He didn't, he said he wasn't looking into things. You know, he hadn't looked at it. He looked at it initially before the job. He looked at it after he completed, quote unquote, completed the job. But even there's a point of reference where he was in error.
If
you don't know the years.
Through January of 09, that's a lot.
Okay. Just, I was concerned that, once again, his data wasn't complete. Next question. Time and again, he asked, or he said, in his assessment, in his analysis, and in his review, he assumed certain things that he considered critical or of concern or of interest. But without Mr. Phelan here, I can't ask him directly. But to you guys, he never asked or told. Sorry, he never told you about those interests, those concerns he had.
Talking about Phelan or the auditor?
The auditor.
No, we had no contact with
right.
the auditor at all.
And Phelan, to my knowledge, did Phelan bring any concerns the auditor might have had?
Not the best of my knowledge.
Yeah, I'm not aware of him doing anything but supplying data and answering questions.
The only thing I can remember was that the manual auditing, because there weren't electronic, took a lot of his time.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. See, that would be a concern to me. If you have any questions, then you should.
Had to come from somewhere. And I'm not saying it came from him. But the two biggest points of contention had to come from somewhere, and he couldn't remember tonight where they came from.
He did a lot of assuming, which in math you don't do. I'm sorry, you don't. You use the math. Math is a fact. You cannot alter them. You cannot. You can say the significant difference in decimal points, perhaps. But the math is math. You cannot do that. We interpret the math, which is what he did, or he assumed the math says certain things. But he didn't relate those questionable assumptions to you guys. He may have related them to Mr. Phelan, but he did not relate them to you, and Mr. Phelan did not relate them to you, and I think that's a problem. I mean, I don't want to say, you know, you guys have got to be more assertive, because you didn't know necessarily what to expect or how to react, but maybe we need to be a little bit more assertive going forward in our professional services to make sure they are doing their job. And I'm not saying anything to you, Miss, but last time Mr. Cushing was here, he was a little upset by what was in the report that kind of put onus on him for not accomplishing certain things or not representing the board correctly. And he said he would investigate them and get back to us. I'm assuming he hasn't told you that because you haven't brought it up to us. What his results were. Am I correct?
I wasn't indicated that there was any report to the public. I have communicated with Borough Council.
Okay. And we haven't gotten an answer, Christine, I'm assuming?
If we're talking about the same thing, we got something right here now.
Oh, okay. As long as we got something. Sorry. That's it. All my questions.
Thank you. You look at me like you want it. You ain't getting it.
Anyone else?
The reporter.
Hearing none, I accept the motion. Okay, any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? We have no ordinances or reports.
Make a motion to receive and file the report.
Second.
Any discussion on our reports?
Just one thing on the manager's weekly report. I did get the police cost analysis. I don't have any further questions. I was just wondering when we'll get the, that was draft form, when we'll get like the final form so that I can say to residents, you know, what savings are that we...
If there's no questions, Natasha and I are ready to hand out to council in final form. I haven't heard from any other council members.
Well, we have a gentleman here who appears to wishes to speak to that.
I'm not here for the sheriff's service.
Okay.
Making that clear.
Right away.
You are here for?
Mr. Mayor and councilmen, I just wanted to bring up to date on a large-scale narcotics investigation our department conducted in the township and borough, if you have a few minutes that I could...
Okay, if I could
review that.
Just ask you to hold on for just a second. All right, anything else on the reports? We have the motion, so all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any abstentions? So I just wanted to get that out of the way.
Okay. Good evening, Tom Cicero from the Township Police Department. This investigation, there was a press release in the paper on the news, but the main part of the investigation was conducted by the Morris County Prosecutor's Office, so a lot of it was geared towards Morris County, and it was in the Express, and I don't think a lot of the residents were aware that it actually occurred in the borough and the township. But on Friday, June 1st, there was approximately 40 law enforcement officers from Warren County, Morris County, came here to Washington, and we conducted the service of search warrants at four different addresses, three being in the borough of Washington and one being in the township. The addresses were 10 East Warren Street, 36A Cornish Street, and 117 Wayne Street in the borough, and there was also an address at 9 Bents Court in the township. This investigation, it was like a seven-month investigation that was conducted by the Morris County Prosecutor's Office that kind of, it's kind of a complicated thing, but our department had started an investigation a few months ago looking into drug activity in the borough, and we developed an informant, and we were getting ready to do a search warrant on a house in the borough. And people from that residence were related to people that were suspects in a criminal investigation out in Morris County. That was a bigger investigation. They were looking into a suspect that they wanted to charge with a couple attempted murders, a couple shootings in Morristown, and also a throat slashing in Morristown. So they kind of stopped us from raiding the house that we were going to raid a few months ago, started like a joint investigation. They're the lead agency. But as a result of that, our department assigned two officers full-time for approximately 2.5 months to the investigation. And on Friday, June 1st, we hit those four residents. We made a total of 15 arrests. Seven were Washington Borough residents. There was four Washington Township residents, three from Oxford. We still have one Washington Borough resident that we haven't located yet. We're still looking for an outstanding, so it would be a total of eight. And there was one suspect from Pennsylvania that was a former Washington Borough resident. As a result of the drug raids, we seized a total of approximately $80,000 in vehicles, drugs, and currency. There was two vehicles seized, 1,000 packages of heroin, and over 5 ounces of cocaine that were all ready for distribution. And
that was in the combined?
Here, yes. Okay. So, I mean, I have the names of the people, but I mean, I think
we saw them online. At least I did.
So, just wanted to make you aware of that you know, we are actively out there trying to do our job. I know several of our officers, I was working this detail, and I was getting calls like every week, every other week from guys saying, hey, we got so-and-so on stop, and they knew what was going on, and they were just, you know, biting their tongue, just...
Right.
Letting things go on so the investigation, you know, could come to a conclusion. So we're, you know, we're out there, we're actively pursuing stuff, and I just want to let you guys know that.
Yeah, the chief did call me the morning of that, just to make me aware of it. As he stated, you guys made a lot of noise doing it, just in case somebody called. And I know I texted the members of council and our manager, those at least who I had their cell phone numbers of that information also. So I think somebody in the back has a question for you, Lieutenant.
I already mentioned this to Tom, but the neighbors in the neighborhood, we want to know if that homeowner, because the people that were in that house were renters. Now, does the borough, does the police department, somebody let the homeowner know that criminal activity took place? And if not, why not?
I'm not aware of us making any notification.
I can check on it. Like I said, ultimately, Morris County, because they had the attempted murder charges, it was kind of like they were lead investigator. So they kind of headed the whole investigation. I will check into that with them.
I didn't know you knew that it was a rented
place. I knew it was because I actually had to come to the borough before to get the tax information and stuff like that for them. Okay. So. I'll check into that and we'll make sure that if they weren't, they will be notified.
I think this is an area of communication that's terribly important to the community, and I think the council and the leadership within the community can be supportive of the police in dealing with this is major stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of shocking, I didn't know it was that bad after. I was assuming it was fine again. But, there are supportive things. We have vacant houses that are not really under surveillance, where state zoning ordinances and so on are not pressed against the owners, and they become pockets of the beginnings of bad neighborhoods and so on. And I think it's incumbent on those of us within the town who are not police, but are citizens willing to report things, or we can expect that services from the council and its bureaucracy, that stuff already on the books is enforced. And then you don't have a situation where it gets bad, but then it gets worse, and it spreads.
As far as the zoning goes, I can't speak to
that. No,
I know
you can't. I mean,
if there's a situation in your neighborhood, an abandoned house, call. I mean, we'll come check it out, and then we'll try and get a hold of the appropriate people to get it, looked at or taken care of.
If we're talking about somebody, an abandoned house where the property's just not being kept up, there is a process that has to be gone through that could take, it's not that we can get there right tomorrow and cut the grass.
Oh, no, I realize that.
We have to notify them and take them to court before we can do anything.
There's no communication between what the municipality knows that a place has been declared vacant and so on. And I remember asking at least a year ago, had the police been informed so when they go by they can check for untoward activity?
Mm-hmm.
And it took at least a year and some yammering on people, quote, more powerful maybe than I, who got a cleanup done, which has saved that one small pocket, perhaps. Something was deteriorating. And I also have wondered over the years what the enforcement is or the supervision is. I'm unloading tonight. I don't know what the ordinances say about rentals and so on, but we have had occurrences over the years where we've had absentee landlords who are not good property owners in many ways, and I don't know what books we throw at them or don't. I don't know. But I think it's part of helping.
Mr. Bellow,
real quick, thank you. First of all,
yes.
I was excellent. Yeah. I heard about it, and it was well done. I'm glad no one was hurt or in the line of duty. My brother's New York Times cop, so I appreciate what you guys are doing. One thing that Ann brought up that I think is excellent is communication in general. I know the council has been asking for police input on a number of things. I don't know if they ever got it. But even an ombudsman, a go-between, somebody to come in and just listen sometimes, has been an excellent report today for the borough. So we appreciate this report, and we hope it's kind of like the start of it.
I think we were down a lieutenant for a little bit. We had an officer retire, and I had, like, I was doing kind of multiple duties. We've since promoted another lieutenant, so I think what we're going to start doing is we're going to have one of us try to get the meetings to, you know, address any issues.
That's excellent.
Well, Lieutenant, I'd like to say this. This is probably a good time when people are complaining about not seeing a cop, huh?
Now you know why you didn't see him quite so long.
Yeah, right. Well,
they're undercover.
Well done. And by the way, why do cops ride through my neighborhood all the time?
You must live in a bad neighborhood.
I must.
Vermont is where Trump has.
Well, that's where the undercover one was.
In your neighborhood, I know you had said something about that in the past, but we told our guys to stay away from the topic because we didn't want to scare anybody. We wanted them to be doctors.
They don't want to scare
anyone. I know what.
This was trying to scare me.
I know.
Okay.
Anyway. I just want to say, there's been comments made, you know, with the police department since they merged about how long you wait for an officer to respond. I called. There was a drunk in the St. Joe's parking lot one night, walking in the parking lot, and he made himself over to my yard and all. And I said, this guy's going to get killed before he gets back home, wherever he's headed. So I picked up the phone, and it's been 3 years that all the police officers all have said to me, just tell them there's activity, because there has been drug activity, sales going on in St. Joe's. Just call, tell them there's activity in St. Joe's. Send a car up. Well, of course, the dispatcher is trying to get the $54,000 question at 2:30 in the morning, who was there, what kind of car, what
how old are you?
You know, you tell him, send an officer, I don't want to see him, I don't want to talk to him, and you hang up on him. But anyway, this night, hey, you've been around long enough. I have. This night I called with this drunk. I had my scanner on. I hit my timer. It took that dispatcher 5 minutes to give that call to the officer on duty. 5 minutes, in relay. Once the officer got the call, he was there in 2 minutes. And he got the guy, yes, he was drunk, and he was down on Lambert Street, so he actually lived in a minute. But, one thing.
That's a problem with the county dispatching. I mean, when we have issues like that, I mean, that's something we probably wouldn't even notice because it's not a real serious call. But there are times with, like, alarms where, you know, it's like a 10-minute delay. And we file complaints with the dispatch on when that happens. So,
this has been going on since that phase, and you and I have been that.
I'm not responsible for the dispatch.
Yeah, I know. I know. You're talking about that. That's been going on since day one.
Thank you, sir, for the merger. Do you have any questions?
Thank you so much.
Thank you, and congratulations.
Thank you.
Well, hey,
thank you.
If you can just wait until this next piece of information that we're
going to
bring up, because I have some questions.
That takes us to old business, the background check information.
All right.
There we go.
All right, we've been going over this back and forth for quite a while. You weren't here at the last meeting, but based on the feedback of the various council members, this is where we're at and what we've found out since the last meeting. I had originally presented to council one ordinance, which would include employees and recreation, employees and youth organizations. We have since split out the ordinances, and we will be introducing an ordinance for just employees, and it would only be new employees, not current employees.
Okay.
And we have a separate ordinance for
volunteers
including recreation, like employees, having to do with youth organizations. And we found out, let me give my whole spiel, and then you can ask your questions. We found out that back in May 2009 that there actually is, you know, I don't know how old the statute is, but there is a statute that allows municipalities to do non-profit youth-serving organization background checks. But you do have to go through the state VRO. You have to do the fingerprint check. And if you look at a lot of the other municipalities, and we have found many more similar ordinances, and they are all written in one particular way, and we've tweaked ours. Ours is pretty similar, but we've tweaked ours to read the same way. And so it does have to go through the State Bureau of Investigation, and they do have to be fingerprinted. And our ordinance will read that these other organizations, you know, need to do it, whether it's sponsored by the borough or not sponsored by the borough, the program, and it has to go through that process, and that they will be paying the cost. The employee is going to be read, and again, they both might fail. I'm hoping that they don't fail. The employee one, the borough will incur the cost. We don't hire a lot of employees every year. In the meantime, I've also found out that the Megan Kanga Foundation will pay. They have received a federal grant. They'll pay for municipal, for all well, volunteers. They'll pay for the background checks, the fingerprinting and everything. And so that's what you have in front of you, where the attorneys are going to review the now to review, you know, ordinances. But I have in front of you a little bit of the information from the Megan Kanka Foundation, and that explains that they do pay for it. The thing is, this grant expires at the end of the year, and if we really want to take advantage of it and have every single one of our volunteers fingerprinted and done, we have to start moving. And the requirement that they have, basically the only requirement that they have, is that we complete the VRO Memorandum of Understanding with the State Bureau of Investigation. And that's the other bit of information that you have in front of you. So after you ask your questions and you hear from the lieutenant, I'm going to make a motion that we can at least proceed with doing that. The Megan Kanka Foundation, they by law cannot require towns to pass ordinances, but they highly strongly recommend it, and I think it would behoove us also to have the ordinance in place anyway. If for some reason it fails, certainly, whether it fails or doesn't fail, I need to reach out to these other organizations, say the baseball organization, as well as the Recreation Commission, to give them a heads up about everything. And if should it fail, I mean, I truly hope after all this that it does not fail. I think it's imperative that we start doing background checks, that they take advantage of this. You know, the baseball, they'd be crazy not to. And even the State Bureau of Investigation said it's a shame more towns don't take advantage of right now this, you know, limited funding. And I just got a packet from the organization, and, you know, they have basically set aside the money from us. We just need to go through our process. And the first step is to do this memorandum of understanding.
Okay.
That's my spiel.
One other thing to add before you question, if you would. It's just so it's clear, the one ordinance on the background check that is for the recreation, it's for volunteers, and it will be 100% paid the first time, and it's usually renewable every 3 years. So you get the fingerprints taken of the coaches, and it's not...
The background check is good for 3 years. The ordinance
right.
Show, you know, every 3 years they would need to do it, so...
So the foundation will be paying at least this first
the
round.
The point is that
for
would
now.
Take the brunt, because we're placing the burden of the cost on the Rec Commission and these other things. That would take the brunt of it off. They would just have
right.
to do it then every, they would have to, they'll have time now to figure out how they're going to raise the money, whether
right.
it's user fees or not, and it won't be a tremendous financial burden right off the bat, because a lot of them will be
and
paid for.
And the ordinance that we're proposing for the new employees would have no penalties. It would be $41 per, background check. And that would include fingerprinting as well. Just a regular standard background check like companies would do. So that's for the borough, new employees. Okay, and it would not include people that, like the fire department or first aid squad, which are already.
And that was based on the discussion that we had at the last meeting. The majority felt that it's not to do background checks on, say, like the planning board or
right.
those type of shade tree commission and stuff. So that's why they will not be getting the background checks. And one final point, and I don't know if I communicated to everyone, that, again, the ordinances, there's another split out. There's not a tremendous difference from what I originally presented to council. And the process that we have in place based on the ordinances, the police chief did give his okay, because he will be part of the appeals committee, and he is the one that will receive the background, you know, the affirmative or disqualifying letter from this VRO organization, and then he'll report to the, you know, recreation director or the borough manager, depending upon the individual being checked.
Okay. Two questions now. The VRO organization.
Are within the State Bureau of Investigation.
Okay. So that comes from an NCIC check, I guess, right? Or a state check?
It's a state, for the volunteers, I should explain. For the volunteers, it's state check and federal check.
Okay. Well, all right. The next question I have. I didn't see anywhere in here where it talked about kids under the age of 18 getting fingerprinted.
Yeah, now, well, like the Megan Foundation,
the legal part that I want to get to about that question is, are we entitled to information for kids under 18?
No.
Can they get fingerprinted for employment purposes?
Because I'm not totally sure if they can be fingerprinted for employment purposes. I mean, there's certain situations where we fingerprint juveniles, but their records can't be released.
So we had talked about this at the last meeting, and it was decided that it would only be for, and that's every town ordinance, it's people 18 and older.
So that's it. That's all you can do.
But, the big but is a lot of the kids, excuse me, a lot of the individuals that are employed in the summertime are under 18.
Mm-hmm. They don't get checked until they're 18. So.
Wow.
Because then you would get into the legal aspect, you would get into all the legal, who knows what.
You can't infringe on the minor rights.
You might have problems then.
Right.
Would it be great? You could ask them to do the background.
Are there minors that have to abide by Megan's laws?
Yeah, I mean, if they were tried as an adult or whatever.
Or even if they're not tried as an adult, they're run through the juvenile system, can they be deemed sex offenders and have to
apply? But we're not talking about Megan's law, David.
I know.
We're talking about the criminal history.
I'm talking about the criminal history.
But I still I'll have to check into that. I don't know if, even if they're under that Megan's law, if their information can be released, depending on what tier they are. I'm not sure on that.
Until they're 18, I'm old.
Right.
Okay. I mean, that's just a question I have.
I know, and it's valid. And even the people, if you speak with, I mean, I've spoken to Maureen Tank herself, she says they can be offenders. You would like them to get checked as well. But we're kind of restricted in...
We're stuck.
Isn't that discriminatory?
Making that a requirement.
In your hiring practices? Because you're not 18 yet, you don't have to go through a background check.
The law says you can't do it. I can't see it being discriminatory.
You are required. Doesn't that fall under age discrimination?
No.
Sure?
Age discrimination only applies to people that are older.
Yes.
Okay. Minors are always treated special under the law.
I mean, you're talking about somebody that could be active age, let's say.
Careful.
That is applied for a job, and he has to go through it. But someone who is...
If there is something that prohibits you from, if there is a state law that prohibits you from obtaining the information because they are under a certain age or a minor, then there's no discrimination as far as that's concerned. I'm not sure how the minor, because I just got the proposed ordinances from yesterday, and I have taken a quick look at them, but I don't know the answer to the question as far as the criminal law and how it applies to minors. If you could look into that, I mean, are we, if that's the case, are we supposed to include in the ordinance that it's okay to do it if we have the parental consent, kind of thing, or you can't ask them to do it anyway?
Kids 14 to 16 are required to have a certain kind of working paper. I don't know what that involves.
Well, that's different. They already do that. Yeah, that's not sense.
If a kid gets adjudicated, they don't get convicted, they get adjudicated, there is no way you're going to find out what that kid did unless you get a court order.
Status of being tried as an adult, I think it would be I don't think you would get any records.
Right.
Yeah. So.
I think we can just let the attorney research that little bit more, and we'll have our answer. But what you're asking for right now,
so now I'm making a motion that the manager can fill out this memorandum of understanding and submit it with the Division of State Police.
All right, I'll second it.
To the VRO.
Okay, any discussion on that? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions?
Okay.
Mrs. Higgins?
I've got some personal comments. I mean, in the research, could you give me information as to when the borough stopped doing the background checks for recreation? Because all the years I was involved, we always did that.
I have no idea. I do know it's been a while because I know a couple of the prior recreation committee members had wanted it also, but it's something that had to stem from council since it wasn't a commission. So I do not know when. I do know, like, the baseball organization, they do some sort of background check. I don't know if it's going to be enough.
But it's not complete. It's not a fingerprint.
Well, right. They're not a part of us, but internally with our, like, swimming, karate, for all those programs, softball, yeah, I don't know when they stopped, but they have not done it in years.
I mean, I know I haven't been talking over 5 years, but...
I know in the past 3 years they have not. So somewhere between 5 and 3 years.
Yeah, we always did background, and that's why I was surprised when you said recreation.
But there's different levels, too, because you can do a background check, and then you can do a fingerprint background check.
No, they were fingerprinted.
Okay.
Who paid for it?
I went to this. Actually, Dean, we did, because we felt as volunteers, they weren't getting paid.
The individual, the person themselves?
No, she's saying the recreation committee.
Because they weren't being paid.
Well, that's our part of our problem. So how did you come up? You should speak with the recreation commission. How you, what'd you do? Increase user fees? Where'd you get the money?
Out of our budget. We just took it out of our budget. They went to, well, we had...
They canceled it.
Well, we did. We went downstairs, had them downstairs.
Now we can't do that.
Yeah, you can't do it anymore.
Right. Can't do it.
That's probably why it stopped.
Right, probably.
But there's other places you can go. It went to the state.
That brings us into new business. But if we do all our renewal of ABC licenses together, that'll be resolutions 97-2012 to 103-2012.
Yeah, so move it, that's fine.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, any discussion on any of these? We don't need a roll call on this, do we? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any abstentions? 104-2012, releasing escrow funds.
Moved.
Second.
Okay, any discussion on that one? Roll call, please.
Higgins?
Yes.
Torres?
Yes.
Gleba?
Yes.
McDonald?
Yes.
Boyle?
Yep.
And 105-2012, an extension of time to Washington Community Solar.
A second.
Thank you. Any questions on this?
Did they say why they need a big...
We're still in the process of getting the necessary permit in Washington Township.
Okay.
And we just agreed to the easement access at the last meeting.
All right.
Delayed a bit, so we're behind a few months.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I don't believe it extends the end time.
No, it doesn't. No, it's
right.
Okay, any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Abstentions. Vouchers. Everybody likes being here, I guess. Motion?
Pay the bills.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any discussion on the vouchers?
I have a couple of questions.
Okay.
It kind of has to go along with something I saw in the audit on page 2, the Comcast, the internet service, like last year, none of them, you know, we were supposed to be taking this money out of that $25,000. I don't, it's not a grant, but...
Right, no, I know what you mean. I have not...
And I know Rich said at the end of the year I would see it, so...
At
I just want to make sure that...
Does
that code, that charge account, is that, does that go back to that $25,000?
I haven't gotten an answer from Natasha on that, but
okay.
I need clarification. Was it at the end of last year that Rich said he received it, or?
Right. We had been asking the beginning of the year, and he goes, what'll happen is at the end of the year, it'll be one lump thing taken out. And then I noticed in the audit that $25,000 did not decrease at all in 2011.
Janine, do you recall how long that was going to cover the bills for?
No, it's a lot.
$25,000.
It should be for a while.
It should be for quite a while.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll get it.
A little while.
then On page 13, the Verizon Internet Library, $600? Is that 1 month? That doesn't make any sense, $600 for the internet at the library.
I also have questions on the library's use of the electric. Again, it seems to me it's...
That's an estimate, Rob.
Okay. Is that how they pay their bill?
Yes.
Estimate?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
I'm sorry, Janine, what page is that?
13.
13.
Maybe I'm missing something. I just see, like, for me, you know.
Right.
$600, just if you could look into it.
Yeah, I will look into that one.
On page 16, what is that, the balance of mandated funds? Who are you paying that to?
That's the balance of what the borough gave the library in 2011. They are entitled to the remainder of their money.
Oh, so they didn't spend that.
That's
so
correct.
Now that's they have
2011
that?
2011.
So who did that? Like the library board? How did they...
The library, what's actually going to happen is we're going to cut them a check for the $25,000. Mm-hmm. It'll go into their own account.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll pay for items that they need. This year, they need extra help because they have someone out on leave.
Right.
So that this money will actually cover the salary for a part-time employee.
Oh, that's good. Okay.
So.
All right. Then my last one is Rob's expense. I greatly admire you taking the classes and everything, but we didn't actually budget for council to take classes. We budgeted for council salaries, and we budgeted an additional $400 to cover conference and meetings. Mainly that $400 is to cover the registration fee for any council member wanting to go to the League of Municipality Convention in November. I mean, by paying this now, we're under $300 left. How much is the registration fee for the league?
$45.
Right.
So,
$55.
I mean, if everyone wanted to go to the league, or if there happened to be, we wouldn't have any money, you know, by paying these sorts of classes. We didn't budget for classes. And like last year, I made bones about, you know, we didn't budget for computers.
To every council person, anybody could have signed up to do this. I was the only one who went.
No, we constantly get notifications to take classes.
Well, this was of interest.
But we didn't budget for it, you know.
There was money budget for it.
No, there was not money budgeted.
It was just in the council money. I thought there was budget, sure.
No, it was not budgeted. No one said they were taking classes this year. When we did the whole budget worksheet, and so that's all I'm saying. All I'm saying is you're down by, you know, paying this, then if everyone's going to the league, then you're now underrunning. Or you're over budget, I should say, not underrunning. That's it.
Any other discussion on the vouchers? Roll call, please.
Higgins?
Yes, I didn't see anything that had to do with the fire department, so I will abstain.
Torres?
Yeah, but I'll abstain on the one item that affects me.
Leva?
Yes, but I'm abstaining from Finelli.
McConnell?
Yes.
And Boyle?
Yep. That brings us to our recap.
I will invite CityNet for a presentation to the public on July 17th. Does anyone have any questions regarding the draft police analysis that the CFO and I put together? If not, then we'll present it as final.
Yep. And I'd like to make it public on the website and send it out an email blast so everyone can see the cost comparison or analysis. For the court, too, I'd like to.
That's already out there.
That's already out there.
Yeah. I will fill out the information for the VRO, for the Memorandum of Understanding, and look into the Comcast grant of $25,000, if that's paying our bills, and the Verizon Internet charges for the library.
That brings us to council remarks. Mr. Torres.
A couple things. With the audit tonight, hopefully there's no resolution as to what's going to happen going forward.
But hopefully we get into some further discussion on it in council and then, you know, make some sort of recommendation as to what to do next. We can't just leave this hanging. So maybe at our, you know, next meeting we can, you know, by then after we digest what happened tonight, have ample time to, you know, consider.
So you're requesting a discussion of that on?
Yes, absolutely, on the next meeting. Also just wanted to remind people that the Celebration for Washington Celebrates America is coming up, so of course contact Rich McGuire for that. That's about it.
Mrs. Gleaver.
I similar with the, you know, what our next steps are between digesting what was said tonight. I don't know if the father specific things, but even just, you know, our own, you know, implementation of certain things that might be able to be changed, you know, that sort of thing. And I wasn't sure also, like, how much, you know, is it something, do we talk about it in executive session or is all the discussion public? Like, say, the response back from the attorney regarding the contract, is that considered contract negotiation? Like, does that have to be discussed in executive session or?
I think so.
Or does that have to be talked in?
Contract negotiation, I think.
Yeah.
I would agree and.
Okay.
Under the heading of
so
negotiation.
So the forensic audit, whatever, could be added to the executive session at the next meeting then. And then regarding, like, Ann's concerns, is the code enforcer still on leave? And
no, he's back.
I wonder if we can invite him in to, you know, answer public questions or, you know, concerns. Like, how exactly does, you know, he go about his job? You know, how proactive he is and, you know. That, you know, how do we handle, say, these vacant properties? I don't know if that's a personnel thing.
Well, it can be considered a council appearance. I mean, we used to do them all the time years ago. I have no problem having him come in and do a report and tell the public how he does his job. I would just be cautious about, here's my list of properties I need you to go look at.
Right, okay.
So, I can talk to him for some time this summer.
Yeah, council appearance would be great. That's all I have. Thank you.
Mr. Higgins.
Yeah, while we're talking about the audit, because that's what we're doing all tonight, I would ask the attorney for a written opinion, and I know it all started with this discussion right here. Was that a binding or non-binding referendum? We need to know the definition of that. Because Bob brought up the question of the legalities. If we could have some information on that written, please. Again, I would like to say thank you to the police department. What was it? You did like 24 and half of them came from the borough?
That's total. 15 one still outstanding from 16 and 8.
Good job. And the communication there. Along with that, the subcommittee for the numbers, have you heard anything? Are they going to give us the numbers or no? I know they want to meet with us.
I spoke to the administrator in Washington Township, and he's doing everything he can to provide us those numbers.
Does he have, like, those we might get?
Attorney General?
No.
Okay. All right. Are we going into executive session? After this?
Do we have a need for it?
Okay, well, I'll get back to that before I miss one thing here. Quick Check. They're building that Quick Check down there on the corner of Brass Castle Road and 57.
Yes.
They were told by the state that they couldn't hook up to our sewer plant, correct?
That's right.
I don't believe so.
No, that was my last interpretation of what was discussed.
Is there any way that we can petition the state to have them hook up before they start digging a big hole with tanks, to put tanks in there?
I believe that the planning board granted them permission.
The planning board
did.
The state said no.
They didn't make the deadline for the wastewater management plan. That's how I understood it. We gave them permission, and they...
According to our engineer, wastewater engineer,
he said no.
No, I got that information from the Quick Check people.
They haven't even approved our plan yet. It's still under review.
It is under review. Didn't that have to go down with all the information for review?
That was prior to the plan being submitted, and it wasn't us that would have had to amend our wastewater plan. It was the township.
There was a specific deadline that Quick-Tech had to meet. If you recall, then when they came before
council. But I thought they met that. They met that deadline, and when it got to Trenton, Trenton said no.
I'd have to review the minutes, but I haven't heard anything from Trenton.
So we don't know if they've been denied or not.
I do not know that.
So we don't know if they're going to hook into our system or not.
I am under the impression they are not, because I thought they missed the deadline. That is how it was.
Okay, can we
I can review it, yes.
Because I really would like to get them into the system.
Sure. Do you have anything from the planning board on that?
It's been a few months since they appeared before us, and I was under the impression that they had the approval.
From the state?
I thought they had all the approvals that they needed for it. But, yeah, so that was a few months ago, so I
could be confused.
Yeah,
they're not hooking in as of right now.
Pardon me?
They're not hooking into our system as of right now.
Okay, but, I mean, is there anything that we can do prior to them putting those big tanks on the ground that are going
to
have to be...
I'll have to find out what's going on.
Okay. You might be able to send a letter. Like, yeah, I think that's a good idea.
I mean, because remember they were going to pay user fees and do some fixing up. And along the lines of the sewer plant, has Frank Magravidi started yet?
Yes, he has. Frank and I met last Wednesday for about an hour and a half.
Okay. Okay. Now, I don't know, we can talk about personnel evaluations as long as we don't mention the person or any specifics, right? Like when they're due.
Yeah.
When they're due.
We can talk about when certain ones are due, sure.
Okay, on July 3rd, the acting manager could have her review. That's what we discussed previously. Mm-hmm. Everybody remember that?
I remember that for 3 months.
Okay.
So I guess get us the forms in our mailboxes.
We're going to use, we already established we're going to use the ones we already had. Didn't we?
Yeah.
We need a fresh supply.
Yeah,
we need a fresh supply, that's all, yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Anything else, Mr. Higgins?
I'm sure there is, but not right now.
Okay, Mr. Boyle.
Did you get in touch with Justin on the Streets Committee? Did he respond back to your letter?
He did not.
No. I'm available this week, anytime in the afternoon next week, if you want to sit and meet.
Okay. I'll reach out to Justin.
That's what I have there.
Okay, I have nothing. Do we have a need for an executive session?
No longer.
Okay. And I would accept the motion to adjourn.
I move.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any